Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the MasterPlan Science Advisory Team meeting. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session. I would now like to turn the call over to Mr. Steve Murray. Mr. Murray, you may begin.
Good morning, everybody. This is the Science Advisory Team meeting, November 9th, for the South Coast region, and we have an agenda today that consists really of three items. Those items are a review of the overall MPA evaluation methods that we use in the South Coast study region. The action that we might entertain is to approve these methods. We have already, as you will hear, approved all the messages that are contained within. Secondly, we have assessment. And we'll be reviewing those. Been asked to provide some feedback on those particular actions. And third, we are looking at approving a what is essentially a historical record of the process, SAT process in the South Coast study region. What we'd like to do to facilitate the agenda is actually move item C, item 3C, Roman numeral 3C, up on the agenda to follow item A, and then we'll spend the majority of the meeting on the MPA options considered by the NLPA Blue Ribbon Task Force. Presumably everybody's okay with that. If you're not, say something. And what I'd like to do now is to call roll here so we can identify the parties that we have on the call who are members of the SAT. So when I call your name, if you would please indicate your presence. Larry Allen. Larry Allen on the line.
Here.
Thank you. Rich Ambrose.
Here.
Eric Bjorkstead. Mark Carr.
Here.
Susan Chivers.
Here.
Chris Costello.
Here.
Paul Dayton.
Here.
Kevin Fleming. Steve Gaines.
Here.
Dominic Gregorio.
Here.
Ray Hilborn.
Here.
John Largier.
Here.
Steve Morgan.
Here.
Steve Murray, I'm here. Daniel Fundella.
Here.
Pete Ramondi. Dan Rosenant.
Here.
Astrid Schultz.
Here.
Steve Stoves. Steve Weisberg. And Steve Wirtz.
Here.
Very good. Did I hear something from Pete Ramondi?
No, this is Mark Carr. I was going to say he's not going to make the call.
Okay. Very good. So I think that we're ready to move forward. We'll hear first an update on the October 20th to 23rd South Coast Blue Ribbon Task Force meeting that I think Ken Wiseman prepared to give, and then we'll move into the evaluation methods and go from there. So, Ken, I think it's your turn. We have Ken on the call.
Steve, I don't think Ken has been able to join the call yet.
All right. Well, let's go to Jason then, and we'll come back to Ken, and we'll pick that up as a prelude. Does that sound fair?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if there's any possibility for you maybe to speak a little louder or get a little closer to your microphone. It is, your voice is a little lower than others.
How about now? Does that sound better?
That's a little better, yeah. They're just having a hard time picking you up on the webcast.
Okay. Thanks. Okay, so let's go to Jason for the review of the MPA evaluation methods, and then we'll come back and try to pick that update up.
Sounds good. And just so you know, Steve, we've got a quorum of the SAT, and so we're okay to take action if necessary. And just a quick reminder to everybody to please mute your phones if you're not talking so that we can limit some of the feedback for everyone else. So just quickly, one of the things that you guys know has been ongoing is the evaluation. The methods used to evaluate MPA proposals in the South Coast study region. It's a very large document that essentially lays out what you've been doing and what the methods you've used to evaluate proposals. As we've gone through the process, we've been approving of the methods and adopting the methods that are used in that. And so we don't need to revisit that. But at your October 6th meeting, we updated the document, included a few revisions and changes, and we underlined those or struck out deletions for you to review for the joint meeting on October 30th. We've punted this item. We didn't have a quorum of the SAT on the October 30th joint meeting, and we had a lot of other things to get through at that meeting, so we decided to move through that document here today, and we'll try and do that very quickly. So I'm just going to highlight for you a few of the changes that were made to the document that you received on October 6th. So just quickly, one of those changes was to Chapter 4 on the habitat representation. Changes were made to Table 4-1 on page 6 on the habitat mapping quality. There's been some new information added to that table. There's a new section that describes the kelp evaluation methods that begins on page 9 of the document and basically describes how it's been applied, and that should be consistent with all the discussions you guys have had in previous meetings. Additionally, on Chapter 5 on habitat replication, beginning on page 16, are some new descriptions of surf grass and kelp, and the addition of Figure 5-2 illustrates the kelp persistence versus the likelihood of kelp, which is on page 19 of that document. Additionally, the modelers made a few changes and revised a few things, and that's begins in Chapter 8, and there's a brief description of how the models handle larval supply and distribution and whatnot. Additionally, in Appendix B, there's a description of adult movement in Table B1, and also a description on the parameterization of the models. So essentially, those really are the changes. That's about it. One addition that staff would like the SAT to okay is working with the chairs to include a description of marlin, the marlin LOP issue that you guys have already, you've already approved of the LOP for that, but we haven't had a chance to add in the supporting description and rationale for that LOP. And we'd like to work with the chairs on that and append it to the document after this meeting. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you, Steve. I think what staff would like to have is the SAT to vote to potentially approve of these revisions, and with the note that the staff will work with the three chairs to append a description of the Marlin LOP issue to the document, and that would allow us to close the door on the document for the South Coast region. Back to you, Steve.
Very good. So, SAT members, we'd like to have a motion on the floor to approve the evaluation methods document with the caveat that the LOP language for Marlin would be added with the co-chairs reviewing that particular edition. As Jason pointed out, the document was provided prior to the October 30th meeting, and we had a brief, very brief discussion of it at that October 30th meeting. So can I have a motion, please, to approve with that single caveat?
Dan Robinette will motion.
Dan Robinette will move. I have a second, please.
Rich Ambrose, I'll second.
Rich Ambrose, second. So, SAT members, discussion on this. Anybody like to speak?
Steve, this is Dominic.
Yes,
can we
Dominic?
Just do this sort of, you know, on the phone? We don't have to put anything on the computer, right?
Go ahead.
Okay. So, I just have two questions. One has to do with, and they're both things that I'm not seeing in the document. So, one has to do with, for water quality, we had a discussion of the Palos Verdes Peninsula, Portuguese Bend landslide, and it was my understanding that that was supposed to be made an addendum to the guidelines. And I might be wrong about that, but that's just my recollection. And the other question had to do, and it's very similar with the military evaluation that we did. So I'm not necessarily saying we have to absolutely add those. I just wanted to hear maybe from Jason or somebody if there's a reason why those weren't in there.
Sure, Dominic. So the military discussion, the military evaluation, and how that was handled was created as a separate document, primarily because it didn't quite fit into the same sort of standard that these methods use, and we handled it in just a separate manner. And so we created that as a standalone document. And then similar with the Palos Verdes second addendum or second document that we created for the water quality stuff, my understanding on that was that we would have that also be a standalone document as supplemental guidance. Remember, there's a difference in this document between sort of guidance and the actual evaluations and methods, and so that's why we kept that one separate. That was my understanding. We certainly can append it. It was approved by the SAT. It is good to go, and if the SAT wishes to append it into this document, we can do so without any fanfare or anything like that.
So that satisfies me. I just want to make sure we weren't missing something and losing something out of the record.
Sure. No, nothing's been lost out of the record. Again, both of those are standalone documents that are available to the public. They're posted on the website. And you know, if the SAT wants to append the PV shelf document into this, we certainly can consider doing that. But
okay. Thanks, Jason.
Thanks.
Hey, SAT members, any thoughts about the water quality inclusion?
Hey, Steve, this is Dan.
Yeah, Dan.
I wouldn't mind seeing the Dominic suggestions appended to the document, just because standalone documents tend to, at least in my world, get lost.
This is Dan Robinette. Did you guys do that as part of the analysis, though? I mean, like Jason said, it was more of a guidance type document that you produced, as I recall, for that landslide area. It wasn't something that you analyzed as part of your evaluations when you looked at all the proposed arrays.
So the quick answer to that, this is Dominic, the quick answer is that we did not change that standalone document for Palos Verdes did not change the numerical way that we handled the evaluation. However, we did consider the recommendations in that Palos Verdes document, and we described those in our evaluation text that we provided to the Blue Ribbon Task Force, as well as in the PowerPoint presentation. So it was alluded to in both the text and the PowerPoint presentation.
So I would say, I mean, since it wasn't, you know, the methods document describes the methods that we use to evaluate these arrays. So I would say it shouldn't be in there because it wasn't part of the methods. And you alluded to it in your evaluation write-up, and there's a standalone document. I would say putting it into the evaluation would be more confusing because people would be looking, well, how do they evaluate this particular thing? And it wasn't evaluated.
Yeah, essentially it was a stay away from these areas, so it wasn't part of the numerical, quantitative, but it wasn't part of the formula that we used to give scores. There were three areas that we recommended to stay away from in the original document. Essentially, we added a fourth one, which was the Palos Verdes landslide area and the White Point DDT file.
All right. Any other comments? We heard Dan's comments. Dominic, I'm not sure you have a position on this. Would you like to make a statement about how you think this should go or not go?
Well, I don't have a strong feeling, but I just was a little uncomfortable when I read through the document, and I wanted to make sure we weren't missing something in the record. Apparently, it's not being missed in the record, but you know, Dan Pondella's point is a good one. Sometimes these standalone things kind of get lost, and you forget about them, and so, you know, I guess I would prefer if at least the White Point, I should say the Palos Verdes document were added as an appendix or something like that to the water quality evaluations, or included as an appendix to the entire document, maybe.
Jason, this is Steve, and I just have a quick point I'd like you to clarify. So we have a set of guidance documents, and then we have this, which are the evaluation methods. So clearly the guidance documents included some things with respect to this. The actual evaluation in terms of how a proposal was scored and all of that for water quality didn't include this issue, and I think largely because the MPAs avoided this area, right?
Right.
So the question becomes this sort of play between guidance and evaluation. What is your take on it from the staff perspective? And I'd like you to also comment on Dan's point about perhaps attaching the military document as an appendix to keep everything together, because we did provide feedback on that.
Yeah, no, those are good points. I certainly agree that we can append the military evaluation document to as an attachment to this. It would essentially be a standalone attachment. We'll make note of it in the table of contents, but it otherwise wouldn't probably wouldn't get a description through the rest of the text in the document. It would just be an attachment. We certainly can also, if the SAT wants, we can append the Palos Verdes Whitest Point guidance to this. But as you pointed out, in general, we wanted to keep this document as a record of the methods that the SAT uses to evaluate MPA proposals, and rather than all of the guidance that the SAT provides, because that can get really large and unwieldy very quickly. I mean, much of the guidance comes, as you guys know, at RSG meetings verbally or at BRTF meetings, and sometimes in side conversations with stakeholders in their work groups. So certainly we are not, from a staff perspective, we're not real keen on trying to capture all guidance that's conveyed, and more really wanted to focus on the actual methods that are contained in the evaluations. But that said, if the SAT wants to see the Palos Verdes Whites Point document appended to this, that certainly shouldn't be a problem.
Steve?
Go ahead.
This is Melissa. Maybe just a suggestion, because I do completely understand the desire to make sure that we accurately reflect guidance and evaluation methods, et cetera. Would it perhaps make sense, because I understand Jason's point about wanting to keep the evaluation methods document clean so that it really is focused on the evaluation methods, would it make sense to take some of those other, I guess I'd say, you know, additional guidance, so to speak, documents, and maybe just compile those into a single document, you know, no additional text, no additional, you know, anything that would need to be approved, but literally just take those additional documents, put a cover on them with a table of contents, so to speak, and that could include, you know, the water quality, the military use areas, maybe even the various answers to questions that the science advisory team provided to the SCRSG, or any other documents that you felt like were providing forms of guidance to the process from the science advisory team. Just compile them into a single document.
This is Dominic. I think that's a good idea.
Steve Words.
Go ahead, Steve.
Following up on Melissa's comment, that could also be, of course, inserted into the master plan for the South Coast Study Region. That way it wouldn't be lost, because it would be encompassed within the master plan itself for MPAs.
I think today what we want to do is, what I'm hearing are a couple of things. First of all, and speak up if you object to this, but I'm hearing that following Melissa's suggestion, it might be good to capture those things that we've approved into a single document and certainly have that as part of a packet here. And I think that's a staff decision pretty much. We've done the approval. How they want to package it to me is okay with the way that they indicated they'd like to proceed. Does anybody have any objection to that? Okay, hearing none, then I think what we need to do today is to approve this evaluation method document so we can finalize that. And what's the intent here is to capture all of those methods that we have previously approved as part of the evaluation process into a single document, with the editing now catching up with what we have gone through and approved on a case-by-case basis. The caveat is that we have yet to get the Marlin level of protection text added in, and I'm hearing that the military document could be appended to this, or alternatively could get put into that other package that the staff might produce. And what I'm suggesting is we would leave the staff to best figure out how that would work. So is everybody happy with that scenario as I outlined it? Anybody unhappy? So
before we vote, I'd like to say something.
Yes,
Ray.
Go ahead.
This is Ray.
Ray, go ahead, Ray.
Okay, I just want to continue my opposition to the spacing guidelines, and that's going to force me to vote against the entire framework package. And I just want to point out that if you've been following what's happening in the BRTF, some of these, whether in many cases are rather arbitrary spacing guidelines, are proving to be extremely important in evaluation a lot of individual reserve alternatives in a way that I suspect many people did not intend them to be.
Any other comments on the evaluation document?
I have a minor editorial sort of theme. This is now supposed to be the final document. The title right now says draft methods used, and then especially in the modeling, I think it's chapter 8, there's a lot of language that talks about, you know, this is a draft figure to be placed later, or, you know, this is going to have ongoing revisions. Should that, all that language be changed so, like, this is what we did instead of,
yeah,
you know, this is still draft or we're still working on this?
Yeah, I think that was Rich, right?
Yeah, that's Rich.
Absolutely, Rich. This is Jason. Once the SAT is comfortable with the basics in this, And if you vote to approve it, what we'll do is the final version is remove draft from those things and go back through and do sort of a copy editing, if you will.
Yeah.
And clean up the
right.
The reference to the process evolving for the South Coast, that sort of thing.
Perfect. Yeah. So it doesn't change anything substantively, but it's just the wording there.
Right. Absolutely not. Will not change anything substantively.
Yeah. Good.
Okay. All right. Any other comments on this? So I think that what we're prepared to do is to move to a vote, but before we do that, we would ask for public comment. For the public, if you press star 1, you are able to get in the queue to make a comment, and we would like your comment to be specific to these evaluation guidelines. So operator, I'd like to ask if you have any members of the public who are lined up who would like to comment on the evaluation methods document before the SAT takes the vote.
Thank you. We will now begin question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star then 1 on your touch tone phone. If you wish to be removed from the queue, please press the pound sign or the hash key. If you are using a speakerphone, you may need to pick up the handset first before pressing the numbers. Once again, if you have a question, please press star and 1 on your touch tone phone. And we have two questions in queue. And our first question comes from Joe X-Line. Please state your question.
Hello, SAT team. This is Joe X-Line, and I had one question for you. While you're working on the LOP for Marlin, I know the issue was brought up around Farnsworth Bank at Catalina. I know that it's stated for trolling purposes only, but normally the fishing methods for Marlin are you might troll for them until you spot one, and then actually put a mackerel on a hook and throw the mackerel at him, generally a really targeted fishing. And I was wondering if that might be also considered as your high LOP, that type of, you know, throwing a bait at a fish along with the trolling. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Operator, we want to proceed to the next comment.
Thank you. And our next one comes from Mary Jane Foley. Please state your question or comment.
Yes, hello, SAT group. This is Mary Jane Foley, who's a stakeholder, and I've been reaching out to coastal water and wastewater agencies. And I'm sorry that I hooked up a little bit after Dominic was speaking on the water quality evaluation between the guidance and the evaluation. And my question is related to, is the SAT continuing to strongly support the buffer zone around the intermediate and large wastewater outfalls? In a really obvious manner.
Thank you, Mary Jane. I think that we have looked at the proposals that have been submitted and evaluated them, and I think that all of those comments that have come forward earlier have been built into those evaluations. And I think that, Dominic, if you want to chip in, but I think that that consideration has been made.
I'll just basically agree with you, Steve, and you know, we were, I think, very clear in recommending the buffer zones. I realized that not every proposal included those buffer zones in the proposal, but we were clear on where that took place when we made our presentation, and we've always said that it was something that would be, you know, essentially at the you know, at the desire of the stakeholder groups and the BOTF on how they implemented the water quality guidance, that it was secondary to the size and spacing and habitat. And I think we've said whatever we can say in that regard.
I wanted to just have one more. Thank you, Dominic. I just keep bringing it up until this is over. The other thing is, have you, Steve, or any of the SAT members discussed the informal memo of the Attorney General's office on whether non-fishing permitted entities would continue and not be affected by the MLPA process?
Dominic, do you have a comment on that?
Well, I've read the memo. I've discussed it a little bit with some of the fishing game folks, but it's been outside of the context of the science advisory team, because that's really, I think, more of a policy issue. I think it's important. Don't misunderstand me, but I think it's really now up to the Department of Fish and Game working with the Water Board and in moving forward once the BRTF decides on their recommended set of MPAs. And like I said, it's a policy thing at this point.
Okay, thank you.
The operator, any further?
Thank you. And our next comment comes from Dave Rudy. Please state your question or comment.
Yeah, my question is about size and spacing, or actually spacing specifically when it relates to lobster. I had a conversation with Dr. Gaines about the larval period for lobster being something approaching 9 months, and the possibility for some exemption in some of the state marine conservation areas to allow lobster harvest and have some sort of an exemption from the spacing because of the long larval period for lobsters.
Okay, this comment with respect to the evaluation methods, can...
Yes, spacing. If a conservation area only allowed the take of lobster and the other species were protected, then it might make sense to have an exemption from the spacing guidance because lobster has a long larval period, whereas the other species may not have that long larval period, and which is the whole basis of the spacing is based on the larval period. Yet the fishery that's going to be most affected in Southern California is lobster, and you know, the larval period being 9 months, it really doesn't make sense to have those spacing guidance.
Thank you, David. Any additional comments, please, from the public?
Yes, and our next one comes from Joel Greenberg. Please state your question or comment.
Good morning, SAT members. Joel Greenberg, RSG. I don't have a specific comment on the item as it stands. I just was testing the system to make sure I could get through in case I have an important comment later. Thank you.
Okay. Operator?
Yes, thank you. And at this time, I am showing no further questions.
Okay, this is a time for you to open all the lines to ensure that anybody who wants to talk is able. And if you'll do that, we'll give a moment if anybody speaks up.
Yeah, Chris Costello has a comment.
Chris.
It's actually more of a question, maybe for Jason or for the chairs. I guess I'm following up on something Ray said, and I'm wondering, could you just clarify whether we're voting on the methods themselves, or are we voting on the changes to this document, which in my reading are in the sort of the LOP section and the modeling section?
Yeah, I can answer that for you, Chris. This is Jason. Hang on. If we can have everyone mute your phones if you're not online, that way others can hear. Thank you. Chris, so I can answer that. The methods have been approved all along. We've been doing that as we go through the process. And so today we are not voting on the actual methods. We are voting, however, on the revisions to the document and just moving it from draft to a done document.
Thank you for the clarification.
Okay, operator, would you close those lines? And now we'll go back to the SAT members.
Okay. All lines are now in listen-only mode.
So SAT members, any additional discussion or comment on the evaluation methods and approving this added revised text? Of course, the Marlin LOP is to be added. There we go.
This is Ray. I'd like to follow up Chris's question. Right, no, my understanding was that we're in this vote, we're simply saying this is the package of evaluation methods we used and we approve it as a package, as opposed to just being we've approved the pieces along the way, but we've never sat down in the South Coast and said this is our evaluation package framework, how we're doing it.
Jason, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I'm thinking. That's a fair point, Ray. I think that early on when we first reviewed the document, we reviewed it as a package and okayed it as a package. The document has most certainly evolved from that point. And so your point is well taken about looking at this as a whole. I'm trying to think about whether or not any of those pieces from that initial look have actually changed. I think that all of the different chapters and all the different sections essentially were part of that whole that we looked at early in this process. It was like at our second meeting or something like that. It was quite early. I don't know that much has changed other than, you know, the nuts and bolts, if you will. Sorry, stumbling a little bit. It's a good question and certainly something that warrants a little bit of discussion maybe, Ray.
any others like to comment on this?
Hi, this is Dan. And you know, theoretically, I think Ray's got a good point. The piecemealing the parts of this document and approving them section by section as we have done is, you know, obviously for logistical reasons in terms of the way the meetings have gone was appropriate. But in the end, we have to vote on this as a holistic document, and I think each SAT member needs to look at all the parts put together and say whether or not that's, you know, the way they think it should go or not. I don't know. I mean, it sounds like that's what Ray was alluding to, and, you know, I don't know. That might be a good thing to discuss.
This is Dan Robinette. You know, we already performed these analyses, so I look at this as, you know, we're saying, yes, this is accurate. This reflects what we have done. I think Ray, it sounds like, you know, he doesn't agree with one of the analyses, but, you know, which is fine. But, you know, those analyses were conducted. They have been presented in our evaluations. So I see this as a vote that we're saying, yes, this accurately reflects what we did for our evaluation processes.
Steve, this is Melissa.
Go ahead, Melissa.
To follow on Dan Robinette's point, I think that is certainly what staff had intended, was that this document would be a reflection of the evaluations that were conducted for the South Coast Study Region, as well as provide some context and rationale for why these particular evaluation methods were used. And so, as you know, in each section there's a brief background and then a description of the evaluation method itself. And as we've gone through the study region, it's accurate that you've looked at some of these pieces individually as opposed to the entire package. And in some cases there were questions about a particular evaluation method, and it was found to be inadequate in some ways for the South Coast Study Region. And so as a result, you did add another evaluation method to address that that inadequacy. So I guess from a staff perspective, I would say if there were big picture issues beyond that, that we probably should have been addressing those all along, and that the intent of this document was to capture in one place for historical purposes and for public understanding what it is that the Science Advisory Team ultimately did in the South Coast Study Region for evaluating the various MPA proposals. And if there's a need, if someone feels like there's a need to change those evaluation methods, that would then be appropriate as we move into the North Coast Study Region to take that step back and say, we need to change one or more of these evaluation methods, and this is how we should change it. And I think that's important, because if we don't have something to replace it with, we need to be able to say to the Fish and Game Commission, this is why this is being changed, or this is why we think this is no longer applicable. But that really is that bigger picture conversation that generally starts at the beginning of each study region. And so I would suggest that perhaps that would be appropriate for the North Coast SAT to maybe take that step back and say, all right, for the North Coast Study Region, as a whole, these evaluation methods, do they still make sense?
This is Chris Costello. I'd like to make a comment.
Yes, Chris, please.
This may be a bad suggestion, but I was wondering if we could just break this into two parts and start by approving the changes to the document, just like we would at any SAT meeting, and then have a second vote that is to approve the what you might call the historical reflection of what we've actually done.
Okay. Additional SAT members like to weigh in on that?
Yeah, this is Mark Carr. I think that's a good idea to sort of break this up into two components that we could address independently.
Okay. All right. So what I need then is, I believe what I need is a substitute motion that someone would like to make, or at least an additional motion, which would be to first vote on simply approving the edited text that is contained in this document. That would mean that we're just looking at the edited statements that have come in here. Now, Before I ask for that, Jason, I need you to comment on something for me, and that is, I know that as we work through these earlier versions, piece by piece, of the evaluation tools, some of this edited text, I think, already appeared, you know, and was approved earlier. So I'm not really sure what the relationship is between the edited text that appears in this entirely new evaluation method document that you produced for us versus what we've already done piece by piece. So could you comment on that first before we go to the suggestion of approving the edited text?
Yeah, I think what you're asking me, Stephen, is whether or not the descriptions of the methods have been approved all along in all previous versions that you guys have seen, and that this new version that you have before you today, the underlined text and the deleted text, which is struck through, are either new additions or revisions to existing text. Is that?
Yeah, but what I'm asking is whether or not when we approved, for example, the levels of protection in the past to make those analyses, there were documents that went along with those approvals. We approved those documents, we approved the presentations and the analyses, and whether what you're seeing here in the product before us today is simply the movement of those individual piece approvals into this large one, or whether there's new writing that has occurred that has been meant to fine-tune some of those earlier approvals.
Yeah, I think I understand you now. So any new writing that was meant to fine-tune any of those pieces is shown in underlined text in this version. Otherwise, it's been incorporated as is in the documents that you saw previously. And so our intent all along was to bring, after we initially provided you the whole document, we then sort of broke it up and we're doing it section by section, and each section essentially got inserted into this document as was approved at the last meeting.
Okay, so you know we're running way behind on our agenda, so we need to move this along. So what I'm going to ask is for a staff member to make a vote, a motion first to approve the edited text in this document. Could I get that vote, please, or a motion, please?
Dan Robinette, I'll move it.
Okay, moved by Dan. I have a second.
Steve
Wirtz will second. Okay, any more discussion on this particular item? Okay, I think we've already had the public input on the evaluation method, so what I'd like to do then is to move to a vote. SAT members, you're voting now on simply approving the edited text additions to the document. So I'm going to go through roll call here. Say yes or no, please, on that motion. Larry Allen? Larry Allen there? Rich Ambrose?
Yes.
Eric Bjorkstead? Mark Carr?
Yes.
Susan Chivers?
Yes.
Chris Costello?
Yes.
Paul Dayton?
Yes.
Kevin Fleming?
Yes.
James?
Yes.
Dominic Gregorio?
Yes.
Ray Hilborn?
Yes.
John Largier?
Yes.
Steve Morgan?
Yes.
Myself, yes. Dan Fundella?
Yes.
Pete Ramondi? Dan Robinette?
Yes.
Astrid Schultz?
Yes.
Those? Steve Weisberg? Steve Wirtz?
Yes.
Larry Allen? Okay, this motion passes. It's unanimous. Now, we'll go back to the original motion, which is to approve this as the evaluation package, if that is in order. And staff, can you tell me whether that is in order? Anybody like to speak up? We've approved the edited comments. Now we can approve the entire package.
I think that's fine. I think that's in order. I think it's important to point out and to note that as we've moved through the South Coast process, that the evaluations have been conducted and presented throughout the three different rounds of proposals that we've seen as a package. And so,
very good. Okay, so the motion on the floor is to approve this as the evaluation methods package. And again, the caveat that the Marlin LOP needs to be added. Discussion on this, please.
Yeah, I know we're delaying things here, but this is Chris again. Could you just please clarify, are we voting on this as the full evaluation package that, you know, is the best package, or are we saying this is a reflection of what we've done? I think they're two different things, and I think that's the source of the conflict here.
This is Jason. Chris, the latter. This is a document that was intended to be a technical record of what you guys have done.
Thank you.
This is Dan Robinette. So I think our motion should just state that we approve this as historically or accurate as in terms of what was conducted or something along those lines.
All right, this is a reflection of what has transpired.
Yeah.
And I assume my movers are okay with that. Any further discussion?
This is Ray. It just seems to me there's two issues here. One is whether we're signing our names and saying we think this is the best science evaluation that can be done, or whether we're simply saying this is what was done, but we make no statements about whether it was any good or not.
Yeah, I agree with Ray. It sounds like the motion has changed.
Other SAT member comments.
This is Dan Robinette. I think we, you know, our approval all along through this process was our approval on that this is the best way to move forward. We've already moved forward. We've done these analyses. I think right now what we're saying is that this is what we did. This is, you know, all the changes that have been made to this document, it still reflects accurately what was done. Our endorsements came well before this.
No, there's two things here. There's one is there's a historical record of what we've done, and I know some of SAT members have disagreed with certain parts of this along the way. I know I have. I was specific about not agreeing with the levels of protection, about how they were unenforceable, and how it's a real Pandora's box putting them in there, and I voted against that. And now, so there's two things here. One is putting my name on a document that part of it I don't agree with, which I think could really be damaging to the long-term process of this, and so that's one issue. Now, the other is this is a historical thing, so, you know, this is what we did, blah, 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 and so that takes us back to Ray's comment, is looking at this kind of as a whole, and do we really agree with that? Do we never, ever, as a SAT member, get to say, I agree with the evaluation document or not, or am I just going to be marginalized by some kind of bureaucratic technical issue about, you know, multiple votes along the way?
This is Mark Carr, if I can respond to that. So there's two key issues here. One is whether, as we went from one section to the next, whether it was LOP or size or spacing, people had an opportunity to express whether or not they supported that particular approach. And if that, position by each of the SAT members was recognized at that point, which is separate from the point of whether this is an accurate representation of what we did. And so there's a question of whether we've already captured the individual considerations of each of the different sections of this document, and we don't have to revisit that or not, because one of the issues here is there's 12 different sections to this document. We have options of if people felt they needed to voice their opinion about or their affirmation about the document, do we have to do each of them separately, or do we do the document as a whole? And if we have to do each of them separately, have we already done that? And have people been recognized for their position on each of those sections previously. And is that captured somewhere in the records?
Hey, other comments? All right. So the question has been raised as to whether or not the motion is about whether this is a technical record of what is preceded, or alternatively, I think as Ray expressed it, whether this evaluation package represents the best available evaluation approach. Is that what I'm hearing? So let's revisit this motion and make sure we know what we're voting on. Now, Jason, what I heard you say is that we would be voting on the historical record. This is a technical record. All the parts have been approved. This is a compilation of those parts. All the discussions that have transpired on have taken place part by part, and this is what we have as the final evaluation package, actually the methods that have been used for this region, correct?
That's correct.
All right, so let's vote on that with that understanding, and if we want to go a step further, let's do that. Let's have a discussion about that that would follow. So this vote is on this record of the evaluation methods that have been used in this region, this collection of methods. Everybody clear on that? Okay, we'll go through here. Please say yes or no. Larry Allen.
Melissa.
Go ahead, Melissa.
I'm sorry, just a quick question, and maybe this would add some comfort for folks. Would it make sense for staff to add a sentence at the beginning of this document that clarifies that this is a record of what transpired as far as evaluation methods, and is not necessarily a reflection of individual SAT member views on the appropriateness of these methods or something to that effect? Would that be helpful?
Ray, Dan, I think you two were speaking up.
Yeah, I would. I mean, basically, I would vote yes on that. If that was part of the document, then I would. I mean, I certainly couldn't disagree. That's what we did.
Okay. Very good. Let's add that sentence. Anybody object? Okay, with that sentence added, and the LOP for Marlins brought in, we are prepared to vote on this. So we'll call roll now and vote. Yes or no, Larry Allen?
Yes.
Rich Ambrose?
Yes.
Eric Bjorkstad? Mark Carr?
Yes.
Susan Chivers? Chris Costello?
Yes, sorry.
That wasn't me.
There's your voice change.
This is Chris, also voting yes.
Paul Dayton?
Yes.
Kevin Fleming?
Yes.
Steve Gaines?
Yes.
Dominic?
Yes.
Ray?
Yes.
John Largier? Pete Morgan?
Yes.
Myself? Yes. Dan Pundella?
Yes.
Pete Ramondi? Dan Robinette?
Yes.
Astrid Schultz?
Yes.
Toes? Steve Weisberg? Steve Wirtz?
Yes.
We have a unanimous approval on that. Now the question becomes, do we want to have further discussion on this, or do we want to move through the agenda? We've got two other items to take up, one of which I think we want to spend a little time on. SAT members, would you like to, is everybody happy with the current state? Okay, I hear that, not hearing anything, so I think what we should do then is move to the next agenda item, which is item C. As we indicated, we were pushing that forward, and let's go look at this. This also was discussed at the October 30th SAT meeting. This document is simply an attempt to put on the record a summary of what we did as a South Coast Science Advisory Team. The objective was to simply review how we went through this, and particularly the kinds of things that we accomplished. And two purposes here, I think. One is to sort of capture the flow and the record of the work done by the SAT in the South Coast. And secondly, and I think This was also designed to help inform the North Coast, the new North Coast SAT, of the kinds of things that are going to be on the table as they move forward. So this document, the attempt in this document is to just simply provide an accurate representation of what transpired, nothing really more. So let's open this up for discussion, and then we'll wind up asking for a motion to approve this document. First, SAT comments, please.
This is Dominic. I have a question and maybe a suggestion, depending on the answer. If you look at the last part of the document that sort of goes through historically all the different things that we talked about at the meetings, from January 2009 on, it looks like accomplishments weren't included, but before that date, the accomplishments were included. So possibly staff could explain why at that point we stopped including the accomplishments.
This is Appendix 2, and obviously the answer is because we didn't accomplish anything, right?
Dominic, this is Satie, and I can speak to that. I downloaded all of the notes, meeting notes and summaries from your meetings, and staff had, up through the first couple of meetings, written down stated accomplishments, and for the rest of them, that was not included. And so one could go back and look at every meeting and figure out which votes were made. I simply left the objectives there because there was no record online of any specific accomplishments.
Well, this is Steve. I don't want to make this document anything more than it needs to be. And so I would just simply say you can strike out the accomplishments in the first set of meetings, because what really is meant here is to be a record of what was entertained at these meetings. The accomplishments are embellished elsewhere.
Yeah, actually, that sounds like a good idea. I was just concerned about the consistency.
Any other SAT comments? Okay, can I have a motion to approve this document then, please?
This is Dominic. I'll make that motion.
And a second?
Well, let me just say with the caveat of what we just discussed.
Very good. Have a second, please.
Dan Robinette.
Got, I think, Larry. Did I hear Larry's voice in the background?
Yes.
Very good. Okay, operator, I guess we would go to the public for comment. Again,
thank you.
Star 1 if you want to comment, please.
That's star 1 on your touch-tone phone if you'd like to comment. And we have Joe Exlon. Exlon with the question or comment. Please state your question.
Hello, this is Joe Exlon, and as usual, this document was not available for the public to review in your agenda prior to the meeting. That's about the only comment I have. There's no documents available.
Sorry about that. Any other public comment?
And our next one, actually, they dropped from queue. They dropped from queue.
Do you have anybody else, operator?
No, sir.
Okay, would you open it up for all lines to ensure that anybody who wants to talk gets a chance?
And at this time, all lines are now open.
Yeah.
Anybody like to come?
It's 6:30 on the dot. I'm going to start going along.
As you can see, that's dangerous. So I'm going to ask you to close the lines now, operator. Nobody's spoken up.
First.
Okay, SAT members. And Jason, before I ask, just a quick question. Was this up? Before the October 30th meeting?
Yes, this was up for the October 30th, and I think the revision date we see here was a minor sort of grammatical style revision that was made to this, and so the substance of this was provided for the October 30th meeting.
Very, 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 very simple. Okay. Staff, SAT members, we're ready to vote on this, I think, then, with Dominic's motion and his recommendation that the accomplishments be deleted from Appendix 2 summaries of meetings. So, Larry Allen.
Yes.
Rich Ambrose.
Yes.
Eric Bjorkstead. Mark Carr.
Yes.
Rivers.
Yes.
Chris Costello.
Yes.
Paul Dayton.
Yes.
Kevin Fleming.
Yes.
Steve Gaines.
Yes.
Dominic Gregorio?
Yes.
Ray Hilborn?
Yes.
John Largier?
Yes.
Steve Morgan?
Yes.
Myself is a yes. Dan Pandela?
Yes.
Pete Raimondi, still not on. Dan Robinette?
Yes.
Astrid Schultz?
Yes.
Those, Steve Weisberg, Steve Wirtz?
Yes.
Very good. We've approved that. And, again, a unanimous vote. So now, folks, we're moving to the Blue Ribbon Task Force options, MPA options that are being considered by the Blue Ribbon Task Force. This is item B on the agenda. And I think we're looking for an update, and then we would proceed into the a presentation and discussion on this. So do we have an update coming?
Yes, Steve, this is Ken. Do you hear me?
I do hear you, Ken.
Good. I was yelling into a phone earlier, and it works. So, thank you, SCT, for coming together at this notice to basically respond to the Blue Ribbon Task Force going into overtime at their last meeting, wherein they had moved forward the three proposals that our stakeholders had done, saying all solid proposals, but we want to come up with a preferred alternative. They've started going down through that process, as many of you may have followed, that there were key geographies where they were looking at different options, some that came out of proposals you've already analyzed, some that they had blended or that were discussed at the meeting. So the request here is to give guidance on these geographies. Chair Rehise Boyd asked all Blue Ribbon Task Force members to put forward anything that they had wanted to continue to discuss as far as the working towards a preferred alternative. So the geographies that you have before you for comment reflect their desire for the maximum amount of scientific information and understanding that they can use in their deliberations tomorrow, where they will be meeting at LAX and plan to craft their preferred alternative. But as we learned from the North Central Coast, that we wanted to take more time at this point. We've had over 6 hours of public comment, 1,100 people. We've had the stakeholders involved in helping answer questions as they understand them and explaining different proposals. The task force is most interested in another chance to understand the science and what they're looking at here as they try to put forward the best possible preferred alternative. So with that, Steve, I think that has set the context, and if there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Questions for Ken? Okay, I think we have an introductory presentation by Satie that will review the various locations that are being discussed. So, Satie?
Great. Thank you very much. Mike, you can go ahead and run this presentation for me. I'll just talk through the slides. So if you go to the first slide, please. Thank you. So the Blue Ribbon Task Force, at their meeting on October 20th through 22nd, looked through proposals 1 through 3 from the regional stakeholder group, and they began to think about different options in different parts of the South Coast study region. And so these are some of the Blue Ribbon Task Force options that have been discussed and are on the table. In the northern part of the study region, there's a reserve at Point Conception that's from Proposal 1. There is a State Marine Park at Kashtayit from Proposal 1 that's been modified slightly. There's a Naples Conservation Area from Proposals 1 and 3, and the Campus Point State Marine Reserve from Proposals 2 and 3, as well as the Goleta Slough State Marine Reserve. Next slide. At the Point Doom area, there were discussions. Option 1, toward the bottom of the slide, has a conservation area paired with a marine reserve. That's the proposal from RSG Proposal 1. Option 2 is quite similar. This actually doesn't depict it exactly. The State Marine Reserve in this case is slightly to the west of where it's depicted, and the marine map has the accurate shape. This is a Proposal 1 slightly modified with the east boundary of the reserve shifted to the west. And option three is really derived from proposal two. And that's this one single state marine conservation area. Next slide, please. In the Palos Verdes area, there are two options that are being considered currently. Option one is a shape that was the BRTF asked the staff to create, and this is really the overlap between proposals one and three, going all the way to the coast there, and slightly modified. And in option two, that's the shape derived from proposal two directly, and that includes a state marine reserve at Point Vicente and the Abalone Cove, a state marine conservation area. They're also moving down the coast. You see Boca Chica has a little reserve and conservation area as well. Next slide, please. In the Laguna area, there are two options that were considered by the Blue Ribbon Task Force. Option one is derived from proposal one, with the reserve paired with two conservation areas on either side. And option two is largely the same shape, shifted down the coast, so that the northern boundary is slightly south of where it is in option one. So that's slightly modified. Also, later in the discussion, you'll see a third option that's come up from discussions with the regional stakeholder groups. Next slide, please. In the San Diego area, there are really four options on the table, so there's a little bit more complexity here to work through. Option one includes the State Marine Conservation Area at Suamis from Proposal 3, and that is carried through options 2 and 3. Option one also includes the South La Jolla Reefs State Marine Conservation Area paired with the reserve, and that's a modified shape from Proposal 3, and that is also modified in option two. There's an area at the Scripps, San Diego Scripps Coastal SMCA, and paired with a little reserve that's from proposal three, and that's carried through options two and three as well. Finally, in option one, you see there's a Cabrillo State Marine Reserve, and down at Tijuana River Mouth, that is option the option one is derived from proposal one. They also include in option one a variety of the different estuarine reserves. So they have Batiquitos Lagoon, San Alijo, and Formosa Slough as marine reserves. Moving toward option two, the main differences you see from option one are that South La Jolla is modified slightly, and you don't see the Cabrillo. No, you do have that one in. Option three has Suamis, but the big difference here is the Sunset Cliffs area is included as a state marine reserve that's derived from proposal two. And option four, the difference here is the Del Mar State Marine Reserve derived from proposal two instead of the Suamis Reserve, or State Marine Conservation Area derived from proposal three, and moving down to the Sunset Cliffs area, you see the shape from proposal two. So four different concepts here that are being considered, and still a lot of complexity in this area. Let's go to the next slide, please. In the northern Channel Islands, you see the Channel Islands protected areas as they were established in 2003. Next slide, please. And at Catalina Island, you see here various configurations. At Farnsworth is a SMCA derived from Proposal 1. At Bird Rock, there is an SMCA and paired with the Blue Cavern SMR from Proposal 1 as well. The Long Point area, a reserve from Proposal 3. They also include the Lovers Cove SMCA and Casino Point State Marine Reserve from Proposals 1 and 2, as well as the Cat Harbor SMCA from Proposal 1, and in addition, the original Arrow Point to Lionhead SMCA on the table. At San Clemente, the two pending military closures are included, as well as the Big Rock State Marine Reserve, which was proposed by the RSG proposals 1 and 2. So these are all options for consideration by the BRTF at their upcoming meeting tomorrow. And there is a work group of the science advisory team that formed to evaluate these different options. And Steve Murray is going to lead the conversation about the evaluation. So I'll turn it over to you, Steve.
Thanks. So my role here is to try to walk you through the information that was generated by the evaluation subteam that reflects on these different options. So if you can put up the first slide for me, I would appreciate it. We don't have that up on the screen now. Put up the next one, please. Would you move the next slide forward, please?
Yeah, sorry, there's just a little bit of a delay. Should be coming up.
Yeah, and go ahead, and I guess you got to click on the text that's going to come in next, huh?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Okay, so this is a summary of really where the focal point of today's discussions are. Three options at Point Doom, two options at Palos Verdes, two options at Laguna, essentially four down here in San Diego. And you can see the distances here between these different options. Now, we have a request from Dan Pondella to make some comments on Point Doom and Palos Verdes because his president has called him to a meeting and he's going to have to run off. So here's how I want to proceed, and then I'll let Dan go ahead and make his comments, and then we'll come back and walk through this a group at a time. And by a group at a time, what I mean is we're going to talk about the Point Doom options and what the evaluation team has looked at and concluded with respect to that. Then we'll move to Palos Verdes, then to Laguna, and then to San Diego. And we've kind of captured this, the discussions of the evaluation group, in an overall slide presentation, which you're looking at here. And this was done at the last hour. So, Dan, you wanted to make some comments about Point Doom and Palos Verdes. Let's let you do that, and then we'll go back and walk our way through the presentation. And after we discuss Point Doom options, we'll turn this open for SAT members to comment on Point Doom, and then we'll move down to Palos Verdes and do the same, and we'll proceed that way, okay? So put up the Point Doom options, if you will, for Dan. And Dan, you can make your quick comments, and then we'll go from there. Just get up to Point Doom, please, and then we'll come back and pick these up. So this is the Point Doom shapes. So Dan, go ahead.
Oh, thanks, Stephen. I really appreciate you letting me talk before I had to run off. My comments about Point Doom and the Palos Verdes options, and I know that obviously this is very political and probably won't be divided on, you know, decided by scientific guidance. But that being said, when you look at the options, it is conspicuous that there are no there's a potential for absolutely no marine protected areas or conservation areas going into Santa Monica Bay at all. And that is problematic from a biological standpoint because that's the only warm water bay and is critical or an important area throughout the bight. So that is just one theoretical problem I have with this. When you look at the Point Doom options, I would recommend, obviously, the option which actually takes a little piece of Point Doom itself and protects the most habitat there, which would be option one. And similarly, I don't either option in Palos Verdes, neither one of them really appears to get into the bay proper. So from a habitat perspective, the option closer to Rocky Point is perhaps better, but you're really kind of splitting hairs out there unless you actually went around the corner of Rocky Point, where the habitat becomes a lot better. So basically, my comments are that it's not having a marine protected area in Santa Monica Bay is conspicuous to me. Obviously, that's where I do research and.
And so I might be a little biased towards that. The other thing, which I just want to make a quick comment on, I don't know, understand why the potential Marine military closure at San Nicolas Island, Alpha Fowl, was just dropped off the table. I mean, if the military wants to close down Alpha Fowl, I don't see why that has been eliminated from the options, and I think that might be pointed out to the BRTF. Thank you.
Thank you, Dan. So let's go back to the beginning of the presentation. Okay, so three options at Point Doom, two options at Palos Verdes, two options at Laguna, and four options in San Diego. And first off, we need to take a look at the distances between the different MPA clusters that are occurring in these locations. So about 35 miles between Point Conception and the SMR at UCSB, another 65 to get down to the Point Doom area, about 30 going across Santa Monica Bay to Palos Verdes, approximately 40 to Laguna, and then depending on where you wind up with San Diego, somewhere between 40 and maybe 60 miles. Now, persistent kelp becomes an issue. Remember, we talked about this at length, that there is no ability to capture or to meet the scientific guidelines for persistent kelp when we get into the Palos Verdes area south, really the southernmost and west and easternmost point of Palos Verdes, all the way down into the Encinitas area. So remember that in this region, the SAT recommended that maximum kelp could be used as a substitution. We need to appreciate that the persistent kelp habitat that would be captured according to the guidelines is not equal to that would be captured by maximum kelp. And remember that in the case of maximum kelp, we're talking about kelp canopy coverage being present in only 1 out of 7 years of surveys. Persistent kelp, if you recall, is really only 3 out of 7 years of survey. Okay, let's go to the next slide then. And some overall comments that relate to size and spacing that need to be, I think, remembered based upon the various decisions that the SAT has made to this point. And that is that these size and spacing guidelines as they exist are based upon many different species, and they have been presented as a set of ranges, minimum and preferred. The size minimums were 9 to 18 square miles, and preferred were 18 to 36 square miles. And spacing was 31 to 62. Now, these are all things that we have moved up before, and have moved through before and have discussed, and are part of our guidance and part of our evaluation. Now, the second point is that the size and spacing influence the diversity of species that are protected by a network, and we know that smaller MPAs are going to protect fewer species, and those that are farther apart are going to reduce the number of species with exchange between MPAs. Let's go to the next slide, and that there are some choices that are made that have repercussions. For example, choosing smaller or more distantly spaced MPAs has some impacts on the response of the network, and when we choose smaller and more distantly spaced MPAs, the risks that the network will not achieve its objectives increase, essentially. Okay, let's go to the next slide, and here are the Point Doom options that need to be discussed. So the Blue Ribbon Task Force has been considering up to this point three options here at Point Doom. I don't think this means that they're going to limit their discussions to these three, but this is all we have at the moment that we have been able to look at. So options, go ahead, you can move forward. The main issues here are size, they are the protection of canyon and kelp habitat. And if we look at the three options, you can see that options one and option two both contain a marine conservation area with high protection and a state marine reserve. And you can see that both options one and option two include the canyon habitats, which are somewhat unique here in Southern California, that are off of Point Doom. Option three contains only a marine conservation area. That conservation area is of high protection. And option three does not include the entire canyon and, in fact, includes only pieces of the canyon that are on the western edge and on the more distant from shore reach of the canyon habitat. Now, with regard to persistent kelp here occurs on the western edge of the marine conservation area in all three options. There's also some persistent kelp that occurs on the Point Dune or easternmost edge of the marine conservation areas in options one and option two. And the difference between options one and option two with regard to that downcoast persistent kelp patch would be that option one encompasses a good bit more of that patch than option two. Now, there are some differences between how much persistent kelp is contained in the marine conservation areas on the western edge of the Point Doom shapes, and we'll see the summary of that as we go to the next slide, I think. So next slide. You can back it up one, so I guess those points are worth mentioning. On the persistent kelp, we can see that when we get a small patch of kelp protected, such as in option two, we're going to have, because of species movements, a lot of edge effects that create some issues about what is really being protected by that MPA. And we also have issues with respect to how much persistent kelp is being contained wherever we're looking as an entity in this region. So next slide, please. This gives you the guideline for replication of persistent kelp. It's 1.14 miles. You can see that in the case of option three, we're getting a continuous patch of persistent kelp that is 1.3 miles. That is all in the marine conservation area on the western edge. Options one and two provide replication of persistent kelp in the MPA, but we're splitting that kelp between the marine conservation area at Point Doom on the western edge and, of course, the eastern part, which is around Point Doom in the marine reserve. In the case of option one, the amount of persistent kelp that is being contained in the marine reserve on the downcoast side of Point Doom is significantly greater than that in option two, whereas in option two, we're getting more persistent kelp on the western edge of the marine conservation area. So next slide. This simply shows us the different options and how they do. And you can see that with regard to persistent kelp, there's some slight differences. And with regard to maximum kelp, actually, which we're seeing some differences between the three as well. And then, of course, we get some differences with regard to the rock habitat. I think we've really covered that with the previous discussions. Next slide. And all three options are going to perform identically with respect to meeting the requirements, the size requirements for replicating habitat. Next slide. So the conclusions that the evaluation group came up with for Point Doom are that these three options are similar with respect to habitat representation, replication, and their contribution to habitat spacing. However, options one and two include the entire canyon, whereas option three really provides limited protection for the canyon. Now, option three encompasses a full replicate of persistent kelp in one location, whereas options one and two split the persistent kelp into two smaller patches in the marine conservation area and the marine reserve. and that edge effects will be minimized for the kelp habitat. If we look at option three, well, edge effects will dominate in the small patch protected in the marine reserve in option two. So these are the conclusions for Point Doom. If you'll back it up three and put the shapes up, we would now ask SAT members to provide their thoughts, comments, and input on this part of the evaluation. So the floor is open for SAT members to comment. By the way, before I do this, let me just say that for the public, we'll work through these shapes, and then we'll go to public comment, and we'll ask you to go ahead and make your comments at that point in time, but we'll work through the whole presentation before we go to public for comments. So, SAT members, anything you'd like to add, comment on with regard to Point Doom shapes?
This is Ray.
Ray, go ahead.
And I can see, by the way, our time's going, that I've got a lecture that's going to be coming up. I'm going to leave in about half an hour, and my comments will probably apply to all of these. And that is that this is, from an overall big picture, this is all hair-splitting. In the grand scheme of things, all of these proposals are so similar that if you were to move to any quantitative kind of analysis of, okay, what species are going to be different, I think you would find, A, the difference between what you would, if you were to go and look in a state marine reserve as opposed to an area with high protection, you wouldn't be able to tell the difference. I'd be amazed if there would be, it would be at all obvious what was different between the two. And that, if you were to run, I don't know if Chris has done these, if you were to run these different options through the models for a range of species, I mean, you'd need a microscope to tell them apart on a graph. In the big picture of the whole Southern California issue. So what we're really talking about is geographically specific issues. I'd like to see a little bit of this bay in there, or I'd like to see this line move back and forth. But in terms of protecting the marine ecosystems of California and the species, this is totally hair splitting, and I think we should not tell the BRTF that these are really very different. And that'll apply to all of the different ones.
Thank you, Ray. Well, Ray, with respect to Point Doom, I just want to point out that the marine conservation area is of high protection, and I think your comments are well taken, and that's why it's labeled that way. So I don't think at Point Doom the issue here is really about whether it's high protection or a marine reserve. The real issue, as we tried to point out, is with regard to the canyon being protected or not protected, and options one and two protect the canyon. Option three protects a piece of the canyon, but mostly on the deeper or at least more shore, more distant ocean side. And then the issue of persistent kelp, whether you are capturing persistent kelp in two places or one, and which of these options essentially then provides whether there's anything scientifically to say about those particular choices. And I think with regard to the comment on contributions to the overall system in the Southern California Bight, I think that, Chris, it would be good for you to weigh in when those issues come up, whether there's anything to be said there. Okay, other comments about Point Doom? And Ray, before you leave, make sure you register back in so we can make sure your comments are well heard if they come up again, okay?
Yeah, Steve, this is Kevin.
Yeah, Kevin.
I'm in almost complete agreement with Ray's comment, but I do have one little thing, is that while SMRs are equal between SMRs, there's no take, there's a great variety in allowed takes, even though they're all high protection. Some groups basically allowed for a lot of take that was cumulatively LOP, high LOPs. And are we going to be commenting on that? Because, again, one blue is not equivalent to another blue.
Well, we've gone through a process of categorizing the different kinds of activities and what that means in terms of creating a level of protection. And so one thing that would be, I think, important if you look at this area right here is well, what does high protection mean here? The evaluation team discusses for this area, and if I have it right, we're talking about what's being allowed in here is spear fishing, kayaking for pelagics, and shore fishing. No hook and line fishing allowed off the shore. Is that what everybody's understanding is?
This is Larry. No, there's no shore fishing. This is
no shore fishing.
Seining for pelagics and spear fishing for pelagics.
All right, seining for pelagics, spear fishing.
Yeah, and they're all the same in these blue areas.
Okay.
Okay.
Other comments about the Point Doom shapes?
Yeah, this is Dan Robinette. From the seabird perspective, we had in our analysis, Point Doom is providing a lot of the protection for seabird roosting sites and also Nearctic foraging sites. So I think from that perspective, SMRs would be favorable. We identified SMRs as providing most protection for roosting sites simply because it limits activity. And then from Nearctic foraging sites, obviously, the seining for pelagic fish leaves some possibility for interactions there. So from that perspective, I think, you know, the SMRs are better.
In terms of the locations of the bird roosting sites that you've identified, where are they?
I believe I would have to look at those again, but I believe those are at the point itself.
At the point.
Yeah, in which would be we could double check on that to make sure that the they do fall within the proposed red.
So they're captured in options 1 and 2, but not in 3. Is that your
opinion? Yeah.
Okay. All right. Any other comments from SAT members on Point Doom?
Yeah, this is Rich Ambrose.
Yeah, Rich.
So it's interesting to hear Ray's comments, and I would be interested in hearing from Chris about whether the model shows a difference. And maybe in the overall network it doesn't make a huge difference, but you could characterize it as hair splitting, but you could also characterize it as the devil's in the details. And here is a place where I think there are significant differences. It maybe doesn't show up in terms of just mapping habitats, but just knowing those reefs there, the reefs that are west of Point Doom are really quite different from the reefs that are east of Point Doom, east of Zuma Beach there. And, those are protected from some oceanographic conditions, and they're pretty good reefs. And so in general, it seems like it would be better to have the Marine Reserve protect more of those. And I think that's part of the reason why you have more persistent kelp there. And then I would support Dan Pondella's comments earlier that it would be helpful to have a more protected area in Santa Monica Bay itself, the bay proper. And so in general, it seems to me that option one is better than the other options, and also because of the protection of the submarine canyon. There is the one problem I find with option one is splitting the kelp. It seems like it would be better to have a larger area of kelp. And so if I had my preference anyway, I think I would extend the reserve. So I think the reserve that would go more in Santa Monica Bay would be better to split it towards the west.
Okay. This is Chris. Can I just make a quick comment?
Of course, Chris.
And Satie may want to weigh in here and refresh my memory, but my recollection is, so we ran, obviously P1 and P2 in the last round, and in this region, I believe, sort of network-wide, the difference was very small between these particular distinctions. But I also agree, was it Rich that was speaking last? Anyway, I agree that I think when you get down to the really fine detail, spatial detail, it's hard to really rely on the models that we've been using. So I think, to the extent that we want to scrutinize these on a really fine spatial scale, I think we probably should not lean too heavily on the models and instead rely on, other criteria like the ones we're discussing.
Thank you. Other comments on this, on Point Doom?
This is Mark Carr.
Mark.
If I can just add, this may be a bit redundant, but I think there's clearly huge differences between option three and the other two options with respect to any kind of protection that's afforded to those species associated with the rocky reef habitat in that canyon. And so then so with respect to that, option one and two seem superior if the goal is to protect that deeper reef habitat. With respect to option one and two and the kelp habitat, to the west side in the SMCA, the difference in the extent of habitat protected between option one and two is really trivial. Where the difference really is, it may be more substantial, is on the east side of that state marine reserve, where you have a larger area of shallow reef habitat protected on the east side of Point Doom. And that should translate into protecting more individuals of any given reef species whose movement distances are confined to that area that's being protected by the SMR. So I think that in the long run, that option one that's providing essentially comparable amounts of habitat protection in the western kelp forest, but greater habitat in the eastern kelp forest would lend greater protection in option one.
Additional comments?
Steve, this is Dominic. So do we have an opportunity as an entire committee or maybe just when this is presented to the Blue Ribbon Task Force for these comments to get captured someplace? Because I agree with what Mark just said, and also with Dan Pondella's concern about, and I believe it was Rich also, with including, at least some portion of Santa Monica Bay in here. So how does that get communicated? I guess that's a question.
Well, I think that what we're trying to do is to make this, present you with what the evaluation team came up with, and then to take these comments that are being made and incorporate them in to what is communicated on to the BRTF at the end of the day. So I think we're all trying to make notes of what is coming through here to add to this. And so what I picked up on Point Doom is we have this issue of Santa Monica Bay being a large deep warm water bay, and that we don't have in option three any of Santa Monica Bay included here, small amount in option two, a little more in option one. And we have the issue of seabird roosting and foraging sites at Point Doom, which would favor SMR protection according to our previous discussions. And that option three, the canyon protection, is very limited based upon what would be perceived movements of deeper species. Whereas option one is providing the best scenario for protecting on the east edge kelp or reef species because of the larger size of the persistent kelp patch there. And that's what I have in addition to the conclusions that are on the slide. You move the conclusions forward, if you would, Jason or Emily or whoever's running this. Satie, we can go forward with the Point Doom conclusions in addition to these. And I think that's what we have to communicate to the BRTF. Does anybody have anything else they'd like to add with respect to that?
This is Ray again.
Great.
I mean, to an extent, what I'm hearing is, well, the more you protect, the more that's protected. I haven't heard any comparative socioeconomic evaluation of the alternatives, which is another part of the SAT evaluation. And I assume, I haven't followed the conversations, that a lot of these issues are because the socioeconomic costs of some of these places are pretty high, or certainly people trying to defend them. So I guess the big question is, are we going to present any evaluation of the different costs of these proposals?
So, Ray, this is Sati, and the EcoTrust did get the options as well, and they were able to do some evaluation. Evan is going to present some of that information tomorrow, but they had such a short time period between the meeting and between the two pieces of the meeting that they were not able to get a complete evaluation done, and we weren't able to fold it into our discussions on the work group.
Well, I'm sure the stakeholders will be there talking about the cost, but I think it's important that the SAT presentation be balanced in saying, here's, you know, here's obviously the benefits, but we also have to recognize that here's the costs, and that's basically what kind of advice we need to giving to BRTF, and it sounds like we're going to be giving them only one side of it.
Ray, this is Betty again. The staff will be presenting all aspects of the evaluation, including this, as well as some of the EcoTrust work, and the Department of Fish and Game will be presenting information on feasibility, as well as the state park. So they will get a range of different kinds of information at the meeting tomorrow.
Thanks, Ray. Anything else on this? All right, let's move on to Palos Verdes. Okay, so the Palos Verdes options that came out of the Blue Ribbon Task Force discussions the last meeting were an option 2 taken directly from proposal 2, and then option 1, which was staff generated and scaled down from, I believe, the option that was present in 3 and maybe with a little bit of influence from 1. Anyway, we have 2 options before us. And so you can see that in the case of Palos Verdes, the Marine Reserve and MPAs are in pretty different places. The option 1 is a 9-square-mile, which is the minimum size that we have put on the table for a marine reserve that is on largely the west side of the Palos Verdes Peninsula. And you'll note that this includes persistent kelp. You can put the next part of the slide up, which has some text on there. So this encompasses persistent kelp and large areas of shallow rocky reef. And you'll notice on the outer edge, those dark spots out there, there is some deeper rock outcrop that's included on the very west and north side of the SMR here in option 1. Now, in option 2, what we're looking at is patchy persistent kelp and a little deeper rock. You can see the sort of little dotted points on the very outer edge at the bottom of the SMR. Maybe somebody can put their cursor on that. Those little deeper rocks on option 2, right there. Okay. Now, the next slide. So, in looking at the modeling results, one of the interesting repercussions was that the Palos Verdes Peninsula was identified as having the potential to be an important area for high local productivity and larval sources for the Channel Islands and mainland coast. Next slide. This was some of the analyses that have come from the actual modeling presentation. And you can see that we look at, and this comes from the original proposals, proposals 1, proposal 2, proposal 3. And you can see that the MPAs that were in Proposal 1, 2, and 3, they're the black lines that are indicated there. And you can see the hotspot here in Proposal 1 on the west side of Palos Verdes. You can see where the larval production sites in Proposal 2 are. And then, of course, you can see that in Proposal 3, there's quite a bit of larval production. So this indicates that there are some differences in larval production, potential larval production, that are likely to be realized, differences between the two options that are being discussed. Next slide. So when we go back and take a look at this, we need to realize that the proposed Palos Verdes SMRs from Proposals 1 and 3, in the context of their proposals, were identified actually as being the most important mainland MPAs in their networks. if we looked at the effects on biomass throughout the study region. The Point Vicente and Abalone Cove SMCs and SMRs were from Proposal 2 were identified as contributing much less to overall biomass relative to the other MPAs in the proposal, in Proposal 2. So next slide. Now this identifies, you can put in the circle there to focus in on the two areas issue. So option one is in pink and option two is in green. And when we look at persistent kelp, we see some very big differences between options one and two. We also see differences in maximum kelp and rock and the deep rock habitat, the 30 to 100 meter rock. So option one is clearly capturing more kelp and it's also including more rock and more of the deeper rock. Next slide. Next slide, please. So the biggest differences between the options are found, they're also shown here because they're found in the replication of rocky habitats and kelp. So option two doesn't provide sufficient kelp protection for a replicate, nor does the rock 30 to 100 meter, whereas option one does. Option one is deficient in soft bottom habitat between 0 and 30 meters. So the conclusions from the evaluation group were that the Palos Verdes area is a major source of larvae, especially for rocky reef fishes. Option one meets a greater number of the SAT guidelines than option two. Option one would serve as a backbone SMR in a network. And particularly considering rocky reef kelp and habitats and other proposed MPAs. And option two would create a gap in protecting nearshore rocky habitats, reducing the likelihood that adjacent MPAs are connected through larval exchange. So those are the evaluation conclusions. If you'll go back to the two shapes, we'd like to open it up for comments from SAT members. So if you put the two shapes up, option one and option two, we'll talk from there.
This is Larry.
Larry, go ahead, Larry.
Yeah, I'd like to throw in here some comments that also have to do with Point Doom, and I think Ray's points are well taken, except that I'd like to give this perspective. From my point of view, having gone to the BRTF meetings and the RSG meetings, is that the shapes at Point Doom and at Palos Verdes are all about socioeconomic impact. Okay, the options that were put forward were really compromises to what we would talk about as guidelines. So what I think what we're trying to do here is make the case that if they go with the options that are really favoring what would be proposal two in the last round, how far away from the guidelines they're getting, okay? And it may well be, as a lot of people have said, that this is a completely socioeconomic or I would say political decision. We at least need to state how far off the guidelines they've wandered.
Okay, other comments on the Palos Verdes shapes?
This is Dominic. So one thing that strikes me looking at option two is that it's much closer to the Portuguese Bend area. And if I remember correctly, in our guidance for that area, we clearly stated that sediment plume occasionally moved up the coast. It didn't always go up the coast. It mostly went down the coast. But that sediment plume would be in that area that it looks like of the conservation area in option two, and that might be something that we need to remind the Blue Ribbon Task Force.
I believe the downcoast edge of the conservation area is at the point that borders the cove within which a lot of the landslide effects are seen, if I have that correctly, and I think I do.
Larry, again, I need to do a mea culpa here because I think I'm probably responsible for that Abalone Cove SMCA to be extended out to state lines. as I was sitting in on the discussion of this shape, and they originally had it halfway out because of what I saw was a minor intrusion with the sediment plume that I argued was at 300 meters.
Well, Larry, the plume we're talking about is actually on the shore, and it's the landslide problem that has occurred in the Portuguese.
Well, but there's also an outfall plume that they showed me, and so this, you know, it might be pointed out to the BRTF by some of the RSU members that they originally were talking about a shape that didn't get into that area.
Other comments on the Palos Verdes point shapes?
This is Mark Carr again.
Yeah.
This is sort of to reiterate Ray's comment earlier, because it's going to apply, I think, to each of these four sites that we're considering, and that is that, you know, what the SAT has done in this presentation is sort of, as Larry suggested, identify more of the ecological consequences of some of these decisions that are being made. I don't think there was time to do a socioeconomic evaluation of these options by the science advisory team, nor do I know if there was the capacity to do that. And in one sense, Chris's comment about the application of the models at this scale is sort of unclear. But it does suggest that at some point in this presentation, there be inserted a comment as to, you know, that this evaluation is focused on the ecological consequences and whether or not there was an opportunity to do a socioeconomic assessment.
This is a very good point, and I think that it's solved pretty simply because the title of this is scientific assessment, and it's really ecological assessment. That's what we've done, and as I think it was pointed out, the staff will be presenting, and others will be presenting the other pieces of this. This is all we could do in the time frame that we had, and the socio-economic, whatever is going to be done there, is coming in another forum, and that's good. But this is really an ecological assessment, I think, that we have performed, don't you think?
And then the question is whether the title of the presentation then should be changed to reflect that more accurately.
That's what I think we should. It should be an ecological assessment of MPA options.
Larry, I would agree with that wholeheartedly. Yeah.
So anybody object to that? I think that's what we've done. That's what it should be titled. Additional comments here at Palos Verdes.
Just
Ray,
one.
Ray, are you still on there?
Yeah, it's Ray. I got another 10 minutes or so here, so I'm hoping to see the San Diego as well. But I would. I'm just looking at the slide from the October, that last meeting in L.A., slide 9 from Chris's presentation. And again, I mean, here's how I would present this. I mean, I would show that slide that shows the conservation value versus the economic value. I'd rescale both of the axes to so they go to zero and so they don't magnify 5 or 10% differences, and, you know, say, look, here we got a cluster of options that are very broadly similar, and what we're now doing is extreme fine tuning. You know, because, you know, it just the you know, when you start looking at one of these, you can talk about any particular area. You can talk about, well, this is different in that sense, but on the other hand, let's step back and look at the Southern California region, and as I say that, you know, that in terms of the overall ecological consequence across all the species, et cetera, you're dealing with a percent here and there. You're not it's not as if the intent of the MLPA will be dramatically different under any of these alternatives, or the consequences with respect to the intent of the MLPA.
Well, this is Astrid. I've been mulling this over as we've been talking, and of course, where there are still quite striking differences is down at the level of, you know, the first order impacts on particular fisheries in particular places. And of course, we do have the fine scale information and our data to do that, and they've been provided to staff who will make the presentation. So I agree with the sentiment that we're, you know, we keep the whole study region in mind, and it is also the case that, of course, there are very detailed socioeconomic data available in terms of the first order impacts of these tweaked options.
Astrid, this is Melissa. Just in the future, as you're speaking, if you could try and speak up a little bit, it's really hard to hear you.
Oh, sorry. I'm sitting in an open plan office, so.
Oh.
Trying to whisper.
Yeah, sorry.
Chris, maybe you might want to comment on this. You know, we did have some information that was shown on the deletion evaluations, you know, in the third round proposals, and obviously these shapes, neither of them match anything that was, at least option one doesn't match anything that was presented before, and option two would only be relevant, as I understand it, in terms of what its biomass effects might be in the context of the other MPAs that were present in option two. But when you look at the shape that was originally proposed in the third package, the Palos Verde shape, which was bigger but in the same general place as that in option one, was by far the largest contributor to overall biomass in the region. What does this mean in terms of how these things might play out when we get to looking at contributions to the overall an overall MPA system at the end of the day?
Well, I mean, I can speculate on that, but I guess I just have two comments relating to that. One is that I think Ray is basically right. If you look at the scale of the whole region, and you were to run the option one versus option two, and that was the only thing you changed, which is something we have not done, mainly due to time constraints, I think you'd be hard pressed to actually see a difference on that. On those aggregate measures across lots of species and that sort of thing. But on the other hand, we do have the ability to look at the fine scale maps and the habitat and the potential for larval production, and we know something about the flow dynamics. And so, I think it is relevant to actually look at the differences in these places, even if it is the case that system-wide, sort of California coast-wide, whether BRTF chooses option one or option two, we're unlikely to see a huge effect. So, I mean, I think the conclusion you've drawn from the modeling analysis is, I would say, a pretty reasonable one.
But Chris, don't you think that the way it's put in that presentation really implies that there would be a significant and measurable difference across the Southern California coast, whereas I really doubt that. I mean, you look at that slide that they showed, and it says, oh my gosh, we'd get so many more larvae. But I bet it's not more than 1 or 2% difference in your averaged across all the species and the whole big picture. And that's what I think the BRTF needs to be looking at, and not implying that this is going to really make a fundamental difference in what the ecological impacts of the MLPA are in this study region.
Yeah, I mean, I basically agree with Ray. Satish sitting here telling me that there is a big difference, and I think in terms of larval productivity, it could be that there is a difference here, but when you look system-wide at what those consequences are, I just don't think it is going to be that significant.
So I would just like to speak for myself, since Chris is mentioning my comment. In the round three evaluations, we have been working with the postdocs on that, and they indicated that for, say, proposal three, this particular marine protected area at Palos Verdes was the most important one in the network, contributing to biomass, and so that's what I was referring to relative to the other MPAs proposed in Proposal 3.
All right, but my point would be that in this scenario, the MSY type management, that total production might only be 1 or 2% of the total larval production from the coast. I mean, yes, that area would produce more, but I just can't believe that it's a very large portion of the total coastwide production.
It's that plus the fact that we aren't really talking about P3. We're talking about a piece of P3.
Well, I think that, you know, in looking at what we had available with regard to the modeling, that what we saw were some pretty big differences between 1 and 2 in terms of what they meant in terms of generating biomass effects within the context of those proposals. So, for example, the option 2 in the context of system bite-wide effects and the other MPAs in proposal 2 contributed much less in the way to that biomass compared to what was in the west side Palos Verdes, something similar to the option 1 shape, but that was in option 3, which was really very, very much larger. So that's what this is intended to capture. And also that the modeling, I believe, identified the Palos Verdes Peninsula as being a pretty important source to Catalina and San Clemente Islands with regard to larval destinations. Anyway, anything else people would like to say about Palos Verdes? Okay, can you move the next slide forward here? We'll walk through this here a little bit more. Next slide, please.
Coming up.
Okay, so now we're down to Laguna Beach. And the two shapes here at Laguna, or the two options at Laguna Beach, are fairly similar to one another. The differences are size of the SMR, option 1 versus option 2, and the northern or upcoast boundary of the SMR appears in option 2 has been shifted down coast. It has been shifted down coast, and as you can see, the amount of the southernmost boundary has not been shifted to accommodate that. So it's been reduced in size a bit. And so for next slide, please, or bring this up. So this shows you the northwest boundary. In option 1, that northwest boundary is near Reef Point. Reef Point is indicated by the arrow, and Reef Point is a place that includes patches of kelp that come and go. And the boundary in option 2 has been moved down coast to remove from the State Marine Reserve the sandy beach component there along section of coastline. So in option 2, the upcoast boundary now is fixed on the rocky point that begins the pattern of rock and sandy coves that proceeds southward from that point on down through Laguna Beach. Okay, you can see that neither of these proposals gives protection at the high level to the persistent kelp that does occur off of Dana Point and slightly to the north of Dana Point. Okay, next slide. Now, there was a discussion that transpired about another shape that might look like the one on the far right side of the screen, which is option 3, which would be to change the orientation of these boundaries. But as presented, even though this shape is a little larger because of its more seaward capture of habitat, that this shape as presented here actually reduces considerably the amount of maximum kelp that's included in the marine reserve. Next slide. So that shape was that option 3 shape was a real new one, hasn't been fully developed, so we don't have an analysis here. But as you can see, that the SAT guideline for replication of maximum kelp is 2.04 miles. The option 1 is 2.06. Option 2 is 2.01. I got option 3 in there now. And option 3 is 1.73. So option 2 misses that maximum kelp guideline, but it clearly within the range of uncertainty of measurements. But option 3 does miss the maximum kelp guideline by pretty substantial amount, particularly when we consider that that maximum kelp guideline is really already only indicating where kelp occurs in 1 out of 7 years. So next slide. Next slide, please. So I think you can see from this, looking at option ones and twos, that there's not a whole lot of difference between them. Option one gets a little more surf grass, gets a little more soft bottom habitat between 0 to 30 and small amounts of kelp and rock. Next slide, please. Next slide. And you can see that the only difference in habitat replication between 1 and 2 is the amount of maximum kelp protected. Next slide. So the conclusions for Laguna: persistent kelp is rare in this region. It's not possible to protect a full replicate of 1.14 miles of persistent kelp. Maximum kelp, 2.04 miles, is what was decided as a substitute, may be protected. But remember, this isn't equivalent to persistent kelp. Options 1 and 2 are similar with respect to representation and replication of habitats, including maximum kelp. Option 3 provides less protection for nearshore habitats and does not include a replicate of maximum kelp according to our guidelines. So using Ray's words, there are very little differences here at all. This may be hair splitting between options 1 and 2 when we look at the overall effects. So these are the comments on Laguna. Anybody like to weigh in from the SAT?
This is Dominic.
Dominic.
Mm-hmm. And maybe staff can help me with this, but it looks like for option two, with the western boundary running north and south away from I don't know the name of that point, but from a certain point there, it looks like that the Aliso outfall would be excluded from the MPA. Is that true?
Have comment?
This is Emily. So the Aliso outfall is the one that would be to the south of option two? Yeah, right there. Okay. I believe that it is included, although I believe there, I mean, it is excluded from the reserve, although there may be a slight overlap of the buffer zone with the reserve shape.
Okay. So option one pretty much eliminates the pipeline, and option two includes the pipeline but not the outfall.
Exactly.
Okay. I was just trying to put that in perspective, and I couldn't see those lines very well on the map on my computer.
By the way, 2 points that came into play here when looking at the differences between option one and two, they're not really ecological points, but they do relate to some real considerations that the BRTF made. In option one, if you'll notice the western edge here, which is at Reef Point, the State Marine Conservation Area that extends north from there is part of Crystal Cove, and then the Reef Point area, and down to the point that represents the upcoast edge of Option 2's Marine Reserve, that also is Crystal Cove State Park. And so that's a sandy beach where the park is going to have folks camping and staying overnight, and I think fishing. And so would like to have that. So I think that the BRTF considered that and hence shoved the upcoast edge of the SMR to the rocky point that demarcates the end of Crystal Cove State Park. So that's just some background with respect to the movement of that. Now, from the science standpoint, I think the analyses indicate that there's really very small difference in terms of how we have looked at the key issues here. I think that's a fair capture. Does that fit your recollections, Mark?
Yeah, I think that's right on the money. Go ahead.
Anything else on Laguna?
So, Steve, just a question then. So going back to your description, So would you say option one includes the ASBS, but option two does not?
Option one includes part of the ASBS.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
So that, you know, so I guess there's two water quality related issues. One is the exclusion of the Aliso outfall and the inclusion of the ASBS, which are both positive things in option one.
Good point.
Just Ray, can I get one last comment in before I've got to go?
Fire away, Ray.
I think that this really highlights one of the problems we have with these threshold values. You know, you say, yeah, certainly the option three was, you know, doesn't make the guideline, but, you know, we're talking 10% here, and it's not as if there wouldn't be significant benefits. And it's probably also true in the levels of protection it'd be interesting to think through. I don't know what activities have been proposed to these state marine conservation areas to the side of the state marine reserve, but how much would those allowed activities that gave it a not a high rating really impact the species we're trying to protect in the kelp areas? You know, would those kelp areas really look fundamentally different? And we don't have a way, you know, there's certainly some conservation value in those areas. And the question is, how much of that is being lost by whatever activities are being allowed in those regions? Anyway, I've got to run now. Thanks for putting up with me. Bye-bye.
Hey, thank you very much. This is our last meeting of this South Coast SAT, so good working with you. Okay, any other comments on Laguna?
I was wondering, this is Steve Wirtz, how the team felt about, although you're missing the maximum kelp, although it's reduced a little bit in option three, you do have more of a contiguous swath of habitat with that shape versus the other two in options one and two. And it looks like our focus is on the near shore, but is there benefits of having that more of that rectangular shape there in terms of overall habitat protection?
I would guess that the additional habitat that's protected is amply protected in the suite of MPAs in the region, but because it's mostly deeper water and I think softer bottom habitat. So the issue mostly here is kelp bed habitat protection, and we really have we been formally given option three, or is that something? What is the status of option three?
This is Emily. I believe it's informal, an option to consider informally, basically due to its late arrival on our plate.
So I think the real issue here is whether or not the maximum kelp is captured and protected, or that kelp habitat is protected. There is quite a bit of extractive activity that is scheduled to go on in the SMCAs. What level of protection are those SMCAs? Does anybody, how do they fit into our categorization scheme?
This is Emily. They're moderate low protection, and they do allow hook and line extraction and fishing extraction of all finfish, as well as pick of lobster, urchins, and coastal pelagic finfish and market squid.
Which is this is Kevin. It's a kind of a point of contention with state parks, and this one we're going to be talking about is that the SMCA, especially the north area that are proposed, are actually lowering the amount of protection available in that area below what is currently there. So they actually increase the amount of allowed uses as proposed.
Okay. Other comments on the Laguna shapes? Okay, let's go forward to San Diego.
Give me 1 second to catch up. All right, should come up in a second.
Okay, here we are for San Diego. And, geez, we've got a variety of things on the table here. So why don't we try to walk through them? And I think if you can put up the next, So let's look at option one. This has come from Proposal 3. So we have an area up here to the north that is a high protection state marine conservation area. We have the embayment there captured as an SMR, and we have that embayment in options 1, 2, and 3. We also have that northernmost marine conservation area with high protection in options 1, 2, and 3. Options 1, 2, and 3 also contain the same pattern in the upper part of La Jolla near Scripps, where there's a moderate low, small MPA in blue, a marine conservation area, followed by a small marine reserve. Only the marine reserve is carried over into option 4, as you can see. Now, another difference between option 4 and options 1, 2, and 3 would be the substitution of a marine reserve. I believe that's at Del Mar in option 4 for the high protection marine conservation area in options 1 through 3 up near Encinitas. Okay, now these options start to differ more pronouncedly, I guess, when you look at options 1 and 2, which have protection in La Jolla. Option 1 provides a combination of a marine reserve with an outside marine conservation area that is of the minimum size that we have elected, the 9 square miles, whereas option 2 has a smaller version of that that falls below the minimum size. It's only 7. And go to option 3, we eliminate protection in the La Jolla area there and move it down to the upper part of Point Loma, where we have in both options 3 and 4 marine reserves with a tiny corner in the upper eastern northern right piece, which reflects the pier fishing allowance at Ocean Beach. Now, all of the options have the very tiny marine reserve at Cabrillo on the tip of Point Loma. They all have that little piece there that you identified. I think it's in, in Mission Bay, that little piece up there. All of those have that. And options 1, 2, and 3 have protection in the Tijuana Estuary, which is on the southernmost edge. I don't see that in option 4. That protection would couple in with the Tijuana Estuary, and those are the differences that we have in place. Now, you can see the sizes that were there. Back it up one. The sizes of the different MPAs, and you can see the differences or the connections between them. Next. So, here are these things. We just walk through exactly what we said before. Go ahead, you can walk it through. And let's look at the production issues. So this is, again, this is rockfish production under MSY management, and this is from the UCSB model, and it has to do with larval production. And, of course, each of these shapes now is analyzed only in the context of the full MPA package. So you can see the differences between the original P1, P2, and P3. So one thing to note is the shape at Swami's in P3 has a larger increase in larval production than the Del Mar shapes that are in P1 and P2. So that's something to recall. And you can also see that this La Jolla shape shows a larger increase in larval production in the context of the P3 proposal compared to P2, and of course in where there is no shape. And then we look at P1, but we have some of that captured as well. Sunset Beach or Sunset Cliffs there on the upper part of Point Loma, we can see the production there. And next slide. So these are the differences between the different shapes. Different four options, options 1, 2, 3, and 4. You can see some of these differences here. Option 4 comes in on the short end in most of these analyses, particularly when it comes to kelp and rock. So option 4 includes less of the nearshore rocky habitats than 1 and 3. Next slide. and the protection of the soft bottom habitats is pretty similar across them all. Okay, you can put the text up for this. So 1 and 3 have the same number of replicates of most habitats. Options 2 and 4 have some issues. Option 2, we need to note that the marine reserve in La Jolla is below minimum size, so it doesn't contribute to a replicate. That shape in option 2 includes key kelp habitat. Next text, in option 4, does encompass replicates of the two deepest rock habitats, but it has fewer replicates of other habitats compared to 1 and 3. Okay, next slide. So the evaluation group looked at this and said that this combination of MPAs is important to consider down here because not all the MPAs represent the same habitats. Most MPAs in this region are near the minimum of the minimum size range. And that this small size of MPAs in this region means that two smaller MPAs will likely better contribute to conservation goals than one small MPA. Next slide. Now, SWALMIs, which occurs in options 1, 2, and 3, that's the uppermost marine conservation area, replicates many different habitats. The Del Mar option, which occurs in 4, that's a state marine reserve, replicates a limited number of habitats, soft and deep rock. The South La Jolla State Marine Reserve in option 2, again, is not of sufficient size to meet the guidelines for replication. And the kelp at South La Jolla, it's known to be persistent. It's high-quality kelp habitat associated with high biodiversity. Compared to the kelp at Point Loma, which grows on lower relief rock, not quite as productive as South La Jolla. And next slide. Next slide, please. Okay, so these are some things to just think about here, and maybe we should get into this discussion next. So let's go back to the full set of shapes and options 1 to 4.
Are we going to discuss the San Diego area at all?
Yeah. That's what we're going to do now.
Okay.
So let's ask for comments on the shapes that are suggested for San Diego, which are before you now. Okay? Anybody on the SAT like to comment?
Okay, it's Paul Dayton. Obviously,
Paul Dayton.
I've been sitting here waiting to comment on this because I think Ray's assertions that they're all the same really fall apart here. These proposals are not the same. They represent really different habitats, and I would suspect that they represent fairly different larval outputs as well, but in terms of protecting habitats and species that are in need of protection, there are very big differences in the San Diego area. The one that Del Mar one, I think, has very little habitat that's very valuable, and the North Point Loma is mostly sand and flat rock. You know, they're quite different from the other, well, the La Jolla and Suwamish habitat. So that's just the beginning.
Okay. Any other comments? Anybody else like to weigh in on the San Diego options?
This is Chris.
And this is Mark.
Chris and then Mark Carr.
Just a quick question about one of the conclusion slides. I don't know if you can easily scroll to that, but the last bullet point said something like two small MPAs are better than one small MPA, something like that. And I'm Satie and I are debating offline here about whether you mean small but still above the minimum, you know, still above 9 miles or not. Could you please clarify that?
Yeah, I think that that's clearly the intent. I think that what you're looking at here, and this occurs in other areas as well, you can see that the sizes of many of these are very small. They just either hit the minimum threshold or go just a little bit of it above it, and then we have a bunch of really small ones that are associated as well. The only one that is of a little larger size is the Del Mar, which is 13 square miles. So I think the point here was that given the recognition that habitats are quite different throughout this region, that two smaller ones would be better than one smaller one in order to get these other differences that Paul alluded to. Given those that are on the table, the options that are on the table. Does that sound like a fair assessment?
Yeah, it's fine. I just want to make sure, I think you might want to say, given that they're above the minimum, because if they aren't, and I'll channel Ray for a second, then someone could argue, well, why haven't we been accounting for that all along? So I think if you mean above 9, I think you should say it.
Got you. Okay, Mark Carr, you wanted to comment.
Well, now I have two comments. First, I'd second Chris's motion, okay, to add that text, because I think it's important. And then secondly, to return to Paul's comment, because I think it is critical. If you look at options 2 and 3, which are sort of options to or alternatives to option 1, you're looking at essentially just reducing and making smaller an MPA, or a reserve in this case, up in the La Jolla area versus adding a larger MPA down in the Point Loma area that actually includes even more kelp, persistent kelp, than the smaller reserve of option 2 to the north. And it really does come down to, in my mind, to this comment that Paul made with respect to fundamental differences in sort of the, not just the quantity, but the quality of those kelp forests in the La Jolla versus Point Loma area. And so I don't want that to be lost by the SAT if Paul's experience is that there is a fundamental distinction between those, the sort of the quality of those kelp forests in the La Jolla versus the Point Loma area. With La Jolla apparently being a more persistent and also supporting perhaps a greater abundance or diversity of species. Is that what you're alluding to, Paul?
Yeah, I think these are areas where we really have a huge amount of scientific data and very intensive surveys and things, and there really are huge differences between the Sunset Cliff area, which is largely sand, and where the kelp occurs, it's a flat, not featureless, but quite flat, habitat versus the La Jolla area that has just about all the habitats that we have in Southern California compressed into La Jolla. It's a very rich area scientifically in La Jolla, but relatively poor in northern Point Loma, Sunset Cliffs. So, yes, you had that right on.
So I guess my comment would be whether or not the SAT thinks that assessment that Paul made should be summarized and added to the text with respect to helping the BRTF make choices among these different options. And I can't see the text. Can we get down to the text with respect to that part of the presentation?
Is this what you're looking for, Mark?
Yeah. So it's the very bottom point there that Paul is referring to. So as long as we think that captures Paul's distinction between those, I think that's very important.
Yeah, thanks, Mark. And Swami's is a lot better than Del Mar, which is largely sand, and where the kelp occurs, on little shallow reefs that get buried with sand periodically. So those two areas are very different from each other.
And I think that's captured in the summary here,
two
points. And so as long, Paul, as you think that fourth point captures your summary of the distinction between South La Jolla and Point Loma, which it seems to me it does, but are you comfortable with that? And
yeah,
if the rest
I
of
guess
the
I would
well.
Say not anywhere near as productive as South Point La Jolla, but it captures it.
So one thing I noticed that isn't captured in the conclusions is if you go back one slide, go back one more. And one more. We're going to have to go back a few more, I guess. Go back to the larval production slide. So we didn't say anything about this, and you know, there are some differences here, I think, that have come to play. It's hard to probably to take those out of context with the overall packages, but certainly if you look at the combination in P3, you've got a really large contribution, and that contribution isn't as large in the other two packages where Sunset Cliffs is substituted, which is consistent, I think, with what Paul has said as well. So there might be a comment of that nature that should go into the conclusion slides as well.
Yeah, thanks, Dave.
Is everybody in agreement with that? Okay, so we got a couple of things to do on those conclusion points. And what I have it is to make the comment or note that two small MPAs above minimum size would be better in this area given the large amount of habitat variation in this region, that different habitats are protected in different options, and that the quality of kelp forests in La Jolla versus the northern part of Point Loma, there's a difference there, and that the Point Loma is much more flat, sand-influenced habitat, less productive, and that Swami's is very different also in terms of the kelp habitat compared to Del Mar, and that we have the larval production differences between the two. Does anybody have anything else they'd like to throw in here? All right, let's go to the end of the day here then and work through the last four slides, and then we'll be looking for public comment, which would be a star one, and you guys can start queuing up. So one of the issues here with the options has to do with persistent kelp spacing, and you can see that this slide tends to show that, the distances between persistent kelp patches here along the mainland, remembering that Laguna is marginal, and if persistent kelp is not included in Palos Verdes, then the distance here varies depending upon which of the southern sites is picked. If it's La Jolla, then we come down to roughly 125 miles and back it up one. If it's Swami's, it's 110 miles. So a big gap here with regard to persistent kelp habitat. Next slide. This just tends to show us where 30 to 100 meter rocky habitats are available. You can see that we're not richly endowed with these kinds of habitats in the Southern California Bight. One at Point Conception, some at Palos Verdes on the west side, and down here in San Diego, we've got them at Del Mar, La Jolla, and Point Loma. The next slide will show the same kind of for 100 to 3,000 meter rock habitats, deep patches there at Point Doom and at, I guess that's Del Mar. Is that correct at Del Mar there?
Yes, that's correct. This is Emily.
Okay. All right. And I think the deepest 200 to 300 meter soft bottom habitats are available in several of the MPAs once we get down into Point Doom and go further south. So this is the one comment that was made that Dan brought up, and I don't know that we've said anything about, is the San Nicolas closure. As I said, we focus this presentation on the areas that were mostly, at this point in time, sent forward as BRTF options. And what that means is that the other MPAs in the system, those at Catalina, those up near Point Conception, and in the Santa Barbara area, are pretty well reduced down to single options. So any other set comments before we turn to the public? Okay, so what I'd like to do is to have first a SAT member make a motion to approve this as the ecological assessment of MPA options that we were asked to look at by the Blue Ribbon Task Force. All the caveats that we have indicated will be put into the presentation. We've walked our way through those. I think I've indicated what those were as we've gone along. Picked up those notes. So can I have a motion to approve this as a...
Stephen Morgan here. I do have a comment before we move on to that, if I may.
Yeah. Go ahead.
The introductory slide, something to the effect that both size and spacing are important, and if both are reduced, then it has sort of double effects or something like that, but nowhere in there did we really raise the issue of habitat representation and species likely to benefit. So habitat has come up mightily throughout these different options, and it seems if we're not going to have a conclusion slide that captures that at the end, we should be working that into the introductory slide somewhere in terms of species likely to benefit that aren't necessarily captured by models and the other things. We did raise some issues with birds, for instance.
So we should add then something, a summary statement on habitat and some of these species likely to benefit that, as you pointed out, are not captured by models. Okay? With that addition, then, can I have a motion to approve this as a product to move forward?
Yeah, this is Rich. I'll make that motion.
Rich makes the motion. A second?
I'll second it. Stephen Morgan.
Thank you. So let's go to the public for comment. Operator, if you can... give us an indication. How many do we have in the queue at the moment?
At this time, we have six in queue.
Six in queue. So let's move them up one at a time. Here we go.
Okay. And our first question comes from Garth Murphy. Please state your question.
Hey, Garth.
Hello. I just wanted to make a comment on Point Doom on the larval production. There is a significant difference between only having the SMCA on the north side of Doom and not adding the SMR that goes into Santa Monica Bay. I pulled up Chris's modeling deletion analysis, and there's a 60% difference if you add that other additional larva production biomass effect if you add that SMR. So Ray was right that if you just look at the SMCAs on the north, they are, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen of the other. But if you add the SMR going into Santa Monica Bay, you get 60% more biomass effect and in a place where you need it. Thank you.
Garth.
Thank you. And our next question comes from James Hudnell. Please state your question.
Hello, SAT members. Not actually a question, but a comment. My remarks are predicated on the assumption that the La Jolla Harbor Seal Rookery is not included in either of the two of La Jolla's proposed MPAs under option one. And what I want to say is, and this is basically taking off from Paul Dayton's remarks, that all of the habitats that we have in Southern California are compressed into La Jolla, or words to that effect. Marine mammals haven't really been considered in the process here of delineating the proposed MPAs, and particularly the pinnipeds, the seals and the sea lions have not been considered, and I understand why, given the fact that we're basically trying to produce more fish with this series of MPAs, but harbor seals in La Jolla play a particularly interesting role in that they probably, according to all suggestions that I've seen in the paucity of literature that's available, they provide ecosystem enrichment to the nearshore habitat. And so the ecological consequences of not including the only mainland Southern California harbor seal rookery in existence into one of the two La Jolla proposed MPAs, I think should be considered. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, next comment.
Thank you. And our next one comes from Michael Beanham. Please go ahead.
Hi, SAT members. This is Mike Beenan. Two comments, or one actually a question. Option three seems to be outside the procedural system that was set up, and I'd like to know the author of that. Laguna SMR, excuse me.
Laguna SMR.
Yeah, relative to Laguna SMR. Option three, the authors of that are in question, and we also feel it's outside the procedures that we've been following. And we had been working with RSG on an option 2A, which would essentially move the option 1 shape in terms of shoreline south to Point Place, and that would capture maximum kelp in South Laguna. And finally, I want to compliment the attention to kelp. I think it's very important. And relative to that, the SMCA at Dana Point fails to protect the only persistent kelp in the midpoint area of this entire network. And finally, relative to marine mammals, we also seem to be overlooking the dolphin rookeries that have been photographed off South Laguna and in the Laguna SMR. So thanks for letting me share those observations and comments.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next one comes from Shelley Walter. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Shelley Walter. I'm an environmental scientist in the Ocean Monitoring and Research Group with the Sanitation Districts of Los Angeles County. And I'd like to thank the SAT for the opportunity to speak today and to applaud you for the work that you've done so far. But I just wanted to point out, when you're talking about Palos Verdes, that the socioeconomic analysis was limited to impacts to recreational and commercial fishing interests. And this analysis portrayed the Palos Verdes option from Proposal 2 in particular as having far less socioeconomic impact than the other two proposals. Moreover, the socioeconomic analysis did not address the socioeconomic impact associated with restriction or relocation of the sanitation district's critical outfall infrastructure located less than 2 miles from the proposed Abalone Cove SMCA in Proposal 2. The cost to move the system would exceed $1.5 billion, which is 14 times greater than socioeconomic impacts to commercial fishing within the entire South Coast region. And we feel that the potential socioeconomic impacts to the sanitation district should have been considered, given the uncertainty with regard to future actions of regulatory agencies with overlapping jurisdictions, such as the Department of Fish and Game and the State Water Resources Control Board. And this uncertainty poses a great financial risk to over 5 million LA County residents. And we have a fiduciary responsibility to protect the investment of these 5 million residents of LA County. I just wanted to let you know that.
Kelly.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next one comes from Bob Osborne. Please go ahead.
Hello, Bob.
Hello, how are you doing? I just had a couple of comments and a couple of questions. One was on the discussion on the water quality at PV. I was involved in helping design that marine conservation area there, and according to the water quality guidance, the M1, page 14 at the June 18th meeting, that was agenda item M1 on page 14 of that document. We're way clear of that offshore plume that you guys approved as the guidance. And I think you ought to go back and look at that before making a comment on that. And then I didn't see any water quality guidance at Laguna or San Diego or any discussion on that. And then there was a comment in here on your slide that says that maximum kelp is not a persistent kelp equivalent, so I was kind of wondering what it was measured against. And that would be nice to get that clarified.
Yeah, I'll run that one by you. So remember that when we calculated the length of shoreline needed to produce a replicate of persistent kelp was based upon not capturing 90% of the biodiversity, how much habitat was required, came from empirical studies, and the decision was made that 1.14 miles would meet that objective. In the case of maximum kelp, you don't have a continuously present bed, 1 out of 7 years present as canopy. So the calculation was made, well, how much kelp in this 1 out of 7 year scenario could would add up, would accumulate to this amount that was needed to capture 90% of the biodiversity. And so 2.04 miles was the result of that exercise. But in a maximum kelp area, we're basically saying that kelp is not going to be there two out of three years compared to what would be present with persistent kelp. If persistent kelp is there 3 out of 7 years, maximum kelp only 1 out of 7 years. So the point here is that this is not an apples and apples thing. It's just the best we can do to give you some, and to give the working group some indication of how to go about trying to get some kelp habitat, which is a key habitat in the process. So I think that's the answer to that one. And let's go to the next comment.
I had one more.
I have one more. Go ahead.
Yeah. I've also heard somewhere, I don't know if it's in your written documents or not, because they go by so fast, that La Jolla includes all the habitat in Southern California. And you know, obviously there's some habitats missing there, soft and deep hard and so forth. So I think that ought to be mentioned. Thank you.
Okay, next comment from the operator.
And our next comment comes from Joe Exline. Please go ahead.
Hi, Joe.
Hello, the SAT members. I have a couple, an overarching observation to be made. It appears to me as though there's 12 habitats that, according to the Act, are kind of equal. All of them are kind of to be presented equally. However, it looks like to me in this whole presentation, only one habitat has really been mentioned, and that overall has been kelp. And I'm just wondering, you know, where do the other habitats fall in this evaluation? And by missing just that kelp habitat in relation to the other 11 that we're supposed to be looking at, really how badly are we doing? And then if I'm allowed to, down as you go, the roosting sites and marine map, I didn't see any at Point Doom. There was a statement there were some roosting sites, and the marine map doesn't state any. There was also a statement that Kevin said at Crystal Cove that the protection actually is lessened in Crystal Cove. And actually, there's a lot of species that aren't allowed, like oyster, crabs, ghost shrimp, worms, et cetera, that are currently allowed and aren't allowed in the new ones. And then I noticed that your analysis is always on kelp rockfish. Is that the only type of rockfish, or is there other rockfish that are actually going to, you know, not the kelp again, you know, there are other rockfish that are going to benefit by some of these deep rock habitats that are outside of the kelp? And I actually went through the species likely to benefit list, and I show that the kelp species only has 16 species with it. The other thing, the rocky reefs have like 10 with the deep rock, 25 with the 30 to 100 rock, and then, you know, 20 with the nearshore reef. So it looks to me like far more species are associated with rock than with kelp. And another thing about the Point Loma thing, I noticed that if you're looking at kelp, there's 1.82 miles of persistent kelp as compared to 1.14, a 60% greater amount of kelp in Point Loma than there is at La Jolla. And the current down there flows from south to north, which has been, you know, you're really wanting current flow to populate the larvae dispersal. And that's about all my comments. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from Sarah Siklix. Please go ahead.
I guess I'm pinch hitting. This is Mark Gold. I'm the president of the environmental group Heal the Bay. Is that okay?
Sure. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay. How you doing? I'm going to echo some of the comments that were made by Dr. Ambrose and Dr. Pondella and others about option one for the Malibu Point Doom area. In just emphasizing again that the submarine canyon habitat with the upwelling zone there, that really it's the only submarine canyon adjacent to nearshore habitat that's protected in this entire in the entire Southern California Bight area, and that's something very, very critical, and I don't think was adequately addressed in the scientific assessment there. Also, the quality of the reef habitat at BKR is much, much higher than the reef habitat west of Point Doom, and it didn't seem like that was given adequate consideration. In regards to a concern that I know is maybe not necessarily a scientific concern, but a political concern, is that perhaps the most heated discussion in all of Southern California has surrounded the recommendations in regards to Rocky Point. I think there's a significant fear that I think was brought up by Dr. Pondella, which is depending on what the BRTF decides tomorrow, with the recommendation you have right now for Point Doom, you literally could have no MPA within Santa Monica Bay proper. And that obviously is unacceptable when you have a national estuary program within Santa Monica Bay with the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission. So we're very, very worried about that trade-off, if you will, in looking at Rocky Point and then sort of not protecting the Malibu area as much as it should be, and certainly not appreciating the unique biodiversity and nature of the Point Doom area. Those are my comments. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak.
Mark? Operator, next.
Our next one is from Jen Feinberg. Please go ahead.
Jen, you on?
He just disconnected. Okay. Our next one is from Leah Protogardis. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Leah Protopapadakis, and I'm actually speaking to you instead of Shelley Luce, the executive director of the Santa Monica Bay Restoration Commission, and not, as my usual role, as the stakeholder for the RSG. And just to echo what Mark said and also what Dan and Rich had said earlier in the discussion, we're sort of almost horrified by what we see the Blue Ribbon Task Force as the decision that they're coming to with respect to two things. One, the disregard for the science and the science guidelines, especially at Rocky Point, and the other with the potential for not having any protected area inside Santa Monica Bay. And I think staff was supposed to have distributed a PDF with two pages in it to you. And the reason I provided these, there are options, because the options you're being asked to evaluate right now from the Blue Ribbon Task Force fall short of meeting the science guidelines. And I wanted to show you that it is possible to meet science guidelines in more ways than one at PV, which is the first page, and at Point Doom, which is the second page. And this last shape also does not split reefs, as you've mentioned was a problem with some of the other options on, I believe, option one and two on Point Doom. And it also spreads the impact of the reserve. Socioeconomic impacts has been brought up a few times more evenly between Ventura and Los Angeles. And it also adds protection for habitat inside Santa Monica Bay. So I hope you'll consider or evaluate the Blue Ribbon Task Force options with these sort of alternatives in mind, and especially in light of the Blue Ribbon Task Force appearance to have chosen option two at PV at their last meeting. Thank you.
Yeah. Who do we have?
Thank you. Our next one is Lois Griffin. Please go ahead.
Hi, this is Phyllis Griffin, new Associate Director of the Sea Grant Program at USD, and I'm a regional stakeholder. I want to go back to a comment that Steve Murray made at the beginning of this call having to do with the fact that in the attempts to negotiate compromise in this very complicated area, the map proposals, all of them, have tended to maximize the distance between reserves and minimize the sizes. Does it help if I talk louder?
We're getting an echo. No matter who talks.
So we need everyone to mute their phones if they're not currently speaking.
Can you hear me now?
Go ahead.
Okay. My question is just a big picture one, and that is with what Steve said at the beginning about maximizing spaces and minimizing sizes throughout the network, whether there is, I don't know, is there a fundamental danger that what we're trying to do here with these relatively minimal sizes and some sort of suspense of the science guidelines, if we're sort of threatening this system in Southern California with not being effective at all, and therefore any sacrifices that people might make in terms of socioeconomics might be for nothing. That's my question. Thank you very much. Sorry for that noise.
Thank you. And our next comment comes from Jen Beanberg. Please go ahead.
Hi, sorry about that disconnection. This is Jen Feinberg Eckerly. I'm a RSC member and an ocean policy consultant for the Natural Resources Defense Council, and I'm actually listening to the meeting with a group of people, so there'll be a couple comments coming from this room. I just want to speak really briefly to the issue at Point Doom, and I really appreciate the comments from Dr. Carr, Dr. Pondell, and Dr. Ambrose, where they were talking about the difference in habitat quality when you're looking at kelp and rocky reef on the east side versus the west side of Doom. And I'm curious if the SAT would be able to put something in writing in your conclusions talking about the higher quality of habitats on the eastern side of Doom with a connection between the canyon and the kelp forest and the rocky reef there, consistent with what you guys were just talking about doing with habitat quality at Point Loma, excuse me, at La Jolla. And I think there's a question here from Michael TV.
Hi. Is it all right to give my comment now?
Yes.
Great, thank you. This is Michael Sheehy with Santa Barbara Channel Keeper. I appreciate all the hard work that went into reviewing these options. I just want to caution the SAT and some of the SAT members specifically that they are careful not to offend us in Southern California across interests by using language like splitting hairs or small differences when we look at the differences in the proposals moving forward. These areas that we're discussing have been, you know, vetted and discussed and compromised and negotiated across all interests, and these are all a lot of hard work went into all these proposals. And so while they might look like small differences, there's significant differences in what is represented and the importance to all interests involved. Another comment I want to make on language also is the results of the bioeconomic model, they show in both conservation value and economic value percentage difference across the proposals. If we're gonna look at the differences in the proposals and the conservation value and call those small differences, I do want to point out that the percentage difference is essentially the same in economic value as well. So if we're going to call the conservation value differences small, we should recognize that the economic value differences are also small. Thank you very much.
If I may, this is Greg Helms for the Ocean Conservancy with one remark about this was touched on a little bit, and I would like to encourage it being amplified in the communications that you give to the BRTF. And this regards the importance about noting the consequences, the ecological consequences of the different arrays with respect to the submarine canyon at Point Doom. We have clear alternatives between protecting an offshore sliver of the Doom Canyon versus alternatives that protect the whole canyon. And those will have a lot more consequences for the effectiveness of that individual MPA as well as to network performance system-wide. And I think Dr. Murray referred to that somewhat in talking about the mobility of canyon-associated species. And I'd really encourage the SAT to elevate that that rationale for full canyon protection there. It really gets to what Dr. Carr was saying about quality of habitats mattering, and here's a case where it's really going to have a dramatic performance. And I would say also that this we can't get trapped in, or we shouldn't get trapped in only thinking about system-wide effects. And you know, back to Mike Sheehy's remark about splitting hairs, the MLPA calls for looking at multiple types of benefits, both network effects and inside MPA effects. And so I'd very much encourage you to elevate that remark about what you get out of a you know, a fractional protection of an important habitat like a submarine canyon versus full protection. And again, remind you that the MLPA calls for protecting those special places for their, you know, sort of own regional benefits as well as those that accrue region-wide. And here comes Ray.
Hi, thank you for this chance to comment. This is Ray Heimster with Orange County Coastkeeper, and I just wanted to mention the kelp situation of Laguna. I'm very concerned about coming in even just below the minimum as being good enough, considering what the idea that we may not meet kelp in Palos Verdes and discussion of possible 110, 140-mile gaps in kelp. We should really be encouraging exceeding a minimum of meeting or certainly exceeding the kelp guideline as much as possible in Laguna, because we really need to patch that hole. And so thank you for my comment.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Done with your group there? Okay, operator, what do we have next?
Our next one comes from Michael Beanham. Please go ahead.
He already spoke.
This is Ginger Wallace.
Oh, hello. This is Ginger Wallace from Laguna Beach, and I'm with Laguna Bluebelt. And I'm really pretty startled to see that option 3 for Laguna has been posted. It is seems to have arrived outside the process, and I would suggest that it should be eliminated from SAT's records. The Laguna Bluebelt has been working on another option and gone through the channels that would, in fact, extend it along the coastline and include more kelp and make kelp for Laguna. But there has been no mention of that, so I think it's pretty unfair that an option 3 has materialized without including the other options that other people have been discussing. Thank you.
Thank you. And our next one comes from Ella Allison. Please go ahead.
Hi, can you hear me? Hello?
Yes.
I can hear you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Hey, Kala. Hi. This is Kala Allison, Regional Stakeholder Group member, and I have a question actually about Laguna Cluster. Are we going to be looking at the take regulations of the SMCAs, and would there be any chance that the SAT would make recommendations for an ideal adaptive management structure as far as adjusting take regulations in the Newport Coast SMCA versus the Dana Point SMCA for the ideal adaptive management? Hello?
Yes, yeah, we hear you. You know, what we've done here is the Blue Ribbon Task Force, after their discussions, produced some options. And so what we've done is we've gone in and tried to give them, as they've asked us, to give them some feedback on some of these options. So that's the extent of our analyses. You know, we haven't suggested new or different things. These have come through the process, and therefore, you know, those are the ones we've tried to evaluate. Points well taken about option 3 at Laguna, and I think we should talk about that when we're done, about whether we even want to bother with that one at this point in time.
Just as a follow-up, I know that the take regulations of the SMCAs weren't really discussed in the last BRTF meeting. We really were looking at the network of reserves, so I didn't know if the SAT would be given a chance to comment on the take regulations as far as giving a scientific analysis of those. Since they weren't really discussed, I didn't know if that were the final suggestions from the BRTF or whether that was overlooked.
Okay. So, Cal, there's not much more to say on that at the moment, but that's a good point to bring up. So I think we need to go to the next comment.
Thank you. And at this time, I am showing no further comments.
Okay, would you open the microphones, open all lines, so anyone who can hear us but has not been able to get through has an opportunity? Anybody else like to make a comment?
One moment. And actually, we have Joel Greenberg, who's in the queue.
All right. Let's get Joel up there.
Well, now it's good afternoon, SAT members. And I'm sure you had no idea this was going to take so long, but everything always seems to when you. So what I'm going to do in the interest of time, I believe there's likely to be other people who have questions, like myself, and we're unable to get through. So I'm not going to hit you with a whole lot of them. Instead, I have questions that are not going to be lobbying you, not going to be beside the point, but I've been taking some notes. So I'll just ask one, hoping for an answer, and then I'm more than happy to give up the floor, so to speak, and wait at my turn again. How many of you are on the it's a two-part question. How many of you are on the sub-team, and how many of you will be present tomorrow?
Well, what do we have on the evaluation team? On habitat size, spacing, replication, we must have about six, seven of us on that, eight of us.
I think six or seven is right. This is Emily.
Yeah. And we're working out who's present tomorrow.
Okay, so I'll blink off and wait my turn again.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And do you wish to open it up for questions again?
Well, do you have anybody else in the queue? We want to end this and move forward. We want to make sure everybody's had a chance to speak. Do you have anybody else in the queue?
We have Joel Greenberg. Location, please go ahead.
He just spoke.
Okay, he just queued up again.
I wasn't expecting to ask the question right away. I was hoping other people were going to chime in. But I noticed on the slides, in particular, you put up the slide for Point Doom, and there were some things there that you didn't discuss or you didn't mention, or just very briefly. And the one that comes to mind is when you, and I, it's hard for me to refer to options rather than, you know, proposals, because I know the proposals, the options are numbered differently. So I'll refer to the SMCA that commences just a little bit to the west of Doom and then runs westward from there. And I noticed that there was, on the slide but not mentioned, was the fact that there's the greatest contiguous amount of persistent kelp, in fact, exists in that particular SMCA, which originates from Group 2.
That was a conclusion that was stated in one of the conclusion comments.
Okay, so I'm sorry for being redundant. I guess basically, in the interest of time, I'm not going to lobby you or criticize. That's the last thing that anybody should be doing on this call. I'm just concerned about tomorrow, because I know that a whole lot of unanswered questions have been opened up. But I noticed you were going to go back to discuss the shape at Laguna, the so-called surprise shape. And I know for a fact that that was not generated external at all. In fact, that it was inserted at the request of one or more BRTF members. So that's hardly, although obviously it came kind of last minute, as you all are aware, we've only been looking at these options for just about a week. And so it's very hard to draw a timeline that suggests that everything to be finished all at once. So I want to thank you guys, and in the interest of time, I will sign off. Thank you.
Thank you, Joel. Okay.
Thank you.
Anybody else queued up?
no one queued up. Would you like me to open all lines at this time?
I will give you one more chance to open them up, and if somebody's going to speak, we need to get them in, and then we're going to
okay.
go back to the SAT.
All lines are now open and interactive.
Operator, can you hear me?
We can hear you. Who is this?
Hi, this is Dave Wiesoff calling.
Okay, Dave.
Hi, just a quick comment, perhaps stating a little bit of the obvious, is that we've all spent, and I'm with the Regional Stakeholders Group, over a year working with you very closely and examining and enjoying the fine work that you've done in terms of establishing the scientific guidelines, et cetera. And over the course of the three processes we've been through, et cetera, we have compromised to the degree that, you know, the last rounds, many of the shapes and MPAs look quite similar from 30,000 feet. And I point out that we've made a lot of compromises over the course of the year, and now as the BRTF has been examining and sort of picking and choosing, we find we're right on the cusp of compromising to the degree that the MPAs are basically going to fail in total because we've just gone over the line. And I would just ask the science advisory team, if you would, to emphasize the points where you have consensus among the SAC with enough vigor, because we are right on the leading edge of compromise to the degree the whole process will fail, and that we won't be protecting enough habitat to really achieve the objectives of the MLPA. Because so many compromises have been made, we're just right on the bleeding edge.
Anybody else from the public like to make a comment?
This is Karen. Yes, Harris. Karen. Can you hear me?
Harris.
Hello?
Oh. Go ahead, Karen.
Okay, this is Karen Garrison, NRDC. I'm using this app. I have an echo. I hope you don't. I just wanted to mention that the Marine Life Protection Act statute actually specifies several guidelines. It says the preferred siting alternative shall be designed according to several guidelines, and one of them is that marine reserves, and I underscore it does say marine reserves, in each bioregion shall encompass a representative variety of marine habitats and communities, and similar types of habitats shall be replicated in more than one marine reserve in a bioregion. Given that, I hope that the SAT will clearly identify the option at Point Doom and elsewhere that, well, at Point Doom, the one that encompasses canyon habitat and a portion of Santa Monica Bay in a marine reserve. Thanks.
Anybody else on the open mic side?
Yes, this is Tom Ford. Can you folks hear me?
Ken, go ahead.
I wanted to underscore two things. One, the way that that Dr. Hilborn was describing, you know, a couple percent loss in production within one given reserve or in a choice between one reserve shape versus another at Palos Verdes. If that logic is applied outward to the entire network and we look at 1 to 2% loss in each one of the reserves, then it seems that we could arguably have a fairly dramatic effect and weaken the benefits of the entire proposed network. So it's fairly scary logic, or at least appears that way on face value, and I think that message needs to be dealt with very carefully. And to the extent that the relative heterogeneity and the representation of different habitat types in the various proposals we're looking at, and I think, you know, the differences in the Palos Verdes shapes are dramatic in the amount of habitat and also the heterogeneity of those habitats they're in. I hope that that's something that can be stressed by the SAT at tomorrow's BRTF.
Anything else from the public? Okay, would you please...
Hello, Hello, this is Wendy Tokihara.
Okay, Wendy, go ahead.
Hi, RSC member. I just wanted to state that I thought that today's charge to evaluate the options put forward by the Blue Ribbon Task Force and not to create new options like Santa Monica Bay. Thank you.
Anything else there on the open mic side? All right, let's close this down and come back to the SAT. So our task here, we have a motion on the floor to approve this evaluation, this information to be forwarded on to the Blue Ribbon Task Force. This is an ecological assessment. We've agreed on that. We have had some additional comments that have come in as we moved along by USAT members. They include the inclusion of some additional introductory slides with regard to habitat and species likely to benefit, and some of those not being captured by the models. We have picked up some comments from you all with regard to the shapes at Point Doom, at Palos Verdes, and at Laguna, and those comments will be looked at and entertained in terms of the overall product that we're sending forward. And I think with that, we should be prepared to move forward and approve this SAT product. So any questions from SAT members with regard to that?
This is Dominic. Just if it's possible, Steve, could you kind of read back what you had in terms of those various comments?
All right. It's going to take me a few minutes, but here we go. So we have the habitat, species likely to benefit, additional introductory slides. We have comments with respect to Point Doom, a general comment about the consideration of the large, unique warm water habitats in Santa Monica Bay. We have the seabird roosting foraging sites at Point Doom. We have comments came up about canyon protection and the issue of east edge size with respect to protecting persistent kelp and reef species. With regard to Palos Verdes, the points that were underscored, and these are all in addition to what we already have in the conclusions, were, again, the point about Santa Monica Bay, that options one and two are both light in meeting the science guidelines. In other words, the emphasis upon how far away from the science guidelines in particular are we looking with respect to option two. The issue of option two being closer to Portuguese Point landslide sediment issues. Then with respect to Laguna Beach, we're talking mostly here about water quality options, which are present as we move from option one to option two. And that's the main point in addition to those that were already made. And then with regard to San Diego, the points about that here are that the habitats, there's very different habitats. There's a lot of variation in habitat type within a category, such as rock here in this region. And that given that variation, that two small above minimum size habitats are better than one, as long as we're reaching the 9 square mile minimum size. And that the quality of the kelp forests in La Jolla versus the northern part of Point Loma are quite different. And similarly, Swamis versus Del Mar, and then the point about, as indicated in the slide, about larval production issues. Those are the things that we have come up with respect to the SAT discussions.
So thank
that's
you.
That's what we're looking at forwarding on. Is that okay with everybody? Anybody have anything that they remember differently? All right.
I do have a comment, Steve. This is Rich Ambrose. On the Point Doom conclusion, since we've had a lot of discussion about that, and I'm looking back at these conclusion slide that we have right now, and I think it's actually misleading about the message that I get from this compared to what I think the science of that area indicates. It, you know, I read here, definitely says clearly options one and two includes the entire submarine canyon, so I agree with that. But then it indicates the next two bullets seem to indicate that option three is preferred because it suggests that it's the full replicate of persistent kelp, but one and two split and the edge effects will be minimized in three. I don't think that's really right. I think that's misleading because I actually think of the, in terms of the science, you know, the quality of those habitats, especially option three is, you know, the least preferred. And so I think we need to worry about the wording of that. And I would propose that we either eliminate those last two bullets or at least add a bullet that's similar to the bullet that we have for the San Diego County conclusion slide that recognizes the quality of the habitats, because that's, you know, there's a problem with just looking at the type of habitat and not paying attention to the quality. And Paul made a really good point about the differences between La Jolla and Point Loma kelp beds, and I think that we have a similar situation here about the reefs that are east of Point Doom compared to the reefs that are west.
Yeah, this is Paul just chiming in. I agree. I think that it's really important for us to emphasize the quality of the habitat rather than just the some of the square footage and things.
Anybody object to some additional info with regard to the Point Doom conclusions? All right, we'll proceed with that and include that. So let's go on now with the vote. So, Larry Allen.
Yes.
Chambros.
Yes.
Eric Bjorkstedt. Mark Carr. Mark has emailed a yes. Susan Chivers.
Yes.
Chris Costello. Paul Dayton.
Yes.
Kevin Fleming.
Yes.
Gaines.
Yes.
Dominic Gregorio.
Yes.
Ray Hilborn. Ray's offline. John Largier. Steve Morgan.
Yes.
Steve Murray is a yes. Dan Pondella. Dan still in his meeting. Pete Ramondi. Dan Robinette.
Yes.
Astrid Schultz. Astrid emailed a proxy yes. Stephen Stowes. Steve Weisberg and Steve Wirtz.
Yes.
Okay, again, we have a unanimous approval of this. So this concludes our business. And
Can I say something, Steve? This is Larry.
Larry, proceed.
I just wanted to encourage all of the people that would make public comments to make sure that they're there tomorrow, which I think is the proper venue for a lot of the comments that came through, because this scientific advisory team isn't really in charge of any of these decisions.
Yeah, that's true. And also, the other point here, that the shapes that we evaluated are not shapes that we have made. So all we can do is work on what's been handed over to us.
Precisely.
Okay, any other comments from SAT members? So this is the...
Yeah, this is Stephen Morgan. I, of course, agree with those comments and encourage people who commented to show up as well. But I'd also like to say what a nice job that the working group, the evaluation working group, and the I team did in producing this information. I think that we've gotten a lot of good feedback, both from the SAT and the public, that will help round this out for the BRTF.
Actually, I think it's really appropriate at this time to point out that the staff that had been working very hard on all of these evaluations, folks like Emily up there, who's maybe going to get some sleep for once in the near future, personally thank you for that hard effort on behalf of the rest of the SAT members. And this is also true for the I team and the other folks who have been working away on this. So from my perspective, thank you very much. And, as one of the SAT co-chairs, on behalf of Larry and Mark, again, I'd like to thank all of the SAT members for your hard work and attention and diligence, and appreciate your participation in it. So this concludes our meeting, and I think we're ready to adjourn. Anybody have any last words? Very good. So this meeting is now adjourned, and thank you very much.
Thank you, Steve.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.